Hello there, and welcome to a very irregular episode of RFN. I won't even call it Radio Free Nintendo, because the N stands for something else entirely. But this is Greg, your erstwhile RFN editor, serving as host on this occasion. And basically, this episode is going to be entirely devoted to a subject dear to our hearts here at RFN, unless you count the other two people that actually are on it at the moment.
Yes.
Something called the National Football League, the NFL.
Da, 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 da.
We can't use that song, John.
Sorry. It was my reinterpretation of it. I'm sorry.
But it had a crucial role to play in the formation of RFN. We bonded over discussing the ins and outs of the NFL.
Discussing and disgusting.
Yeah, and being disgusted by it a lot, yeah. So this week, apparently, it came about that Johnny and Guillaume both going to be completely out of reach, can't do anything with it. So, you know, there was talk about a week off and all this, but apparently, John, you were to blame, I understand.
I did float the idea, but then, you know, I thought better of it, but then James came in and he pushed it forward, so.
I did. I pushed it over the goal line.
Yep.
But see, I pushed it more as how we used to talk about sports, which is mostly just swearing and crying and making fun of the various characters that make up our sports franchise.
Lots of references to NFL coaches that haven't worked since most of our listeners have been alive, like Jerry Glanville and Buddy Ryan, you know, so that was probably would be taking it too far, I think, because look, I want to make this very clear to people listening that are coming in for legitimate Nintendo discussion and they're not going to get it. The opportunity cost here is zero. There would not have been anything RFN if not for this, so I don't want you to be upset, but at the same time, we don't want it to be a situation where zero would actually have been preferable.
We've never had that episode before.
No, perish at all. So we are going to try and have a fun discussion of the upcoming NFL season. We're not under any illusions about the fact that people who actually want to have some legitimate analysis of what the NFL might look like in 2013 have got plenty of places to find that kind of information, and this is not one of them. So we're going to keep it kind of fun and light. But, you know, at the same time, it's a passion of ours, so we're going to get into it. I think it's just going to be fun. We're going to look at who we'd like to make the playoffs in the two conferences and who ultimately will contest the Super Bowl. But the one thing I will say is that if anybody's familiar with our usual show, the absolutely sterling, dare I say, prophetic record that it's had at predicting the outcomes of E3s and things of the video game industry in general. Well, no, we kind of felt like, well, yes, we have a special expertise in video games, but we can be that wrong about so many other things. And the NFL is definitely one of those things.
Up next, we're going to take on the stock market. It, and then we're going to take on crops. It's going to be awesome.
What are you going to predict about crops? There will be corn.
So that is going to be a sort of show for this week. There isn't going to be too much for people who do not have any interest in the National Football League in this one, but we will preserve the tradition of now playing in the middle of the show to point you towards some excellent content on NintendoWorldReport.com. So at the very least, if you're using the enhanced version, you could skip to that.
Just skip to the end.
Skip to next week. That worked. They've invented time travel, right? So with that, we are going to get on to a preview, going division by division, beginning with everyone's favourite division, everyone's, the NFC East, home of the Washington Redskins, the Giants, the Cowboys, the Philadelphia Eagles, all likable teams. And James, we have to get this out of the way. James is a resident Redskins fan.
Okay, so James, how far do you go back with the NFC East? Like, how far do you go back as a fan?
I mean, as long as I can have memories.
Okay, so that'll be, so that's like, but that's like back into what? Like back into the 80s or?
Probably around 89, 90.
Okay, that's fantastic, because that's when it just got completely ridiculous.
Yeah, when Jerry bought the team, James' brain lit up.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a division that has the worst collection of people not named Aaron Hernandez, this is your division. Because every single team has something on there where you go, God, really?
Well, yeah, obviously, being a Buffalo Bills fan, all three of the opponents that defeated the Bills in those Super Bowls of the 90s come from the NFC. It's not my favorite division, I assure you of that. And even the Eagles, the fans could be difficult to sympathize with, even being with
because them. They're terrible human beings.
Yes, fans of the Eagles are notoriously nasty.
Oh, hold on. My living room just got set on fire. Go figure.
Yeah, they're everywhere. The thing about the NFC East over the past couple of seasons is just been ridiculously difficult to predict because it's such a melange of stuff that just all the teams tend to be really quite close together, and it goes down to the last day of the season who's actually going to win the division. I mean, you only have to look at the fact that a couple of years ago, the Giants went 9-7, managed to win the division with that record, and then won the Super Bowl. And then last year they were 9-7, pretty much exactly the same. They started well, faded down the stretch, and then they narrowly missed the playoffs altogether. So the margins are that fine when it comes down to the NFC East.
You also have teams, I mean, like the Eagles, who completely went out, got a bunch of free agents, stacked their team on paper, and then just completely imploded.
No, Vince Young's dream team.
And the Cowboys as well. The Cowboys consistently have a pretty stacked team on paper. And then you have Romo, the interception holic, who comes in and just botches everything.
I feel sorry for Romo. He's had some things to do. I mean, last year, the Cowboys' offensive line was laughable. I mean, semi-pro.
Trust me, it was laughable. I laughed many times.
I mean, you talk early in the season, it was really semi-pro stuff because they were so inexperienced up front. And they did get better, but unfortunately, the defense got injured and got worse, so it kind of leveled out, and Dallas finished out for them, unfortunately. They finished 8-8 out of the playoffs. And for me, I think Washington, this would be their division to lose. I would be content to say that actually this year it's not going to be as close as it's been in previous years if it wasn't for the Griffin health thing. The Redskins, if you look at last year, their defense took a really tough knock when they lost both Carricker and Arakpo from the defensive front seven. I think it was week two in that ridiculous game against the Rams with the taunting penalty and all that. See, James knows what I'm talking about. And the defense was accordingly terrible. But in the second half of the season, they started playing commendably well. That, along with, you know, Griffin getting better and all that, catapulted them into the playoffs. They were one of the hottest teams in the league by the end of the year. And this year, with Arakpo Carricka coming back, another year in the scheme, Griffin in his second year, it all seems lined up that they would be real contenders this year. But then there's the knee tear, and Griffin's not going to play in preseason.
He better not.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I agree with that, but it's not going to help in the short term, you know? So I do kind of worry. Everyone will kind of think about Adrian Peterson, who tore his knee at the end of the 2011 season and then came back and was full go in 2012 and had one of the best seasons any player at any position has ever had in the history of the NFL. And that might give some people some unrealistic expectations. Every rehab is different. I mean, that is just ridiculous what happened
there.
I mean,
yeah, and Peterson doesn't run the same way Griffin runs either.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is, as a quarterback, your knees are so much more exposed than they are, you know, as...
No, when you're just dropping back to pass, somebody can roll up on you, there's, you know, all that kind
of... You get blindside hits, too, as a quarterback, that where you can't control, where somebody hits you in the knee, and then some guy hits you up high. You have stuff like that. So.
No, I mean, he's elusive and all that. And some people might think, oh, well, you know, he's not going to take as many shots as some people. But, I mean, mobile quarterbacks are not immune from punishment. I mean...
Well, he was taking more shots last year, he was taking lots of shots.
He would never go down.
I mean, some of it, you've got to be sort of apt to protect yourself. And, I mean, I don't know whether that's something you'll develop in his game as years go on and the injuries mount up, or it's just wired into his competitive brain. But personally, I still back Washington to win the division, but maybe not by the margin that they could have done. I guess the problem is it's just too many nits to pick with the other teams for me. I mean, if you look at the Giants, the defense, the wheels came off big time last year, and injuries had a certain amount to do with that. And that's, I mean, one thing I'll say about the NFC in general is there's not a lot of bad teams in it. most of the teams have something to be said about them. There's just a very few. I think there's three teams in the NFC last year that finished more than one game below 500.
Yeah.
By contrast, the average record of the last three Super Bowl winners is below 10 wins.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's so compressed. And the Giants are right in the middle of that compressed league. But I just feel like, you know, the pass rush, which was so fearsome when they're at their best, is getting a bit creaky. And the secondary is not nearly good enough to compensate for that.
And when they've lost some talent too. They've had a couple players jump. They've had people get older.
Manura definitely looked. I mean, they've lost him. He's gone to the Falcons now. He looked like he'd kind of hit a wall last year to me.
Well, I think this division. I think you can write the Cowboys out because.
Here's the thing. I feel like we shouldn't talk about the Cowboys. We should be like the one NFL thing that does not talk about the Cowboys. Well, does not give them the oxygen that Jerry craves.
Can we just say that their coaching situation is hilarious now?
Yeah, I mean, it does bear watching because he is kind of crazy. Like, Jason Garrett has kept his job, but he's not calling the offensive plays anymore. They've completely overhauled the defensive coaching staff and are now going to play a 4-3 Tampa 2 style scheme, which, you know, when you consider they've been drafted for 3-4 since Parcells was there.
Well, I mean, you can interchange them really easily. Just ask Albert Haynesworth. Fuck that guy.
He's a wounded man there, James.
I just feel like this year I'm not getting suckered in by the Cowboys. This is going to be the Cowboys year. You hear that every single year, and I'm just
the
not
problem
buying
is
it.
It's like they've been a game out of the playoffs, and if they'd got in, you never know. You don't know. I mean, well, you're one of these people that just thinks Romo's a hideous choker, well, I suppose you do know he just choke when he gets in there, but. I don't know. I mean, I'm not so harsh on Roma. I think he's dealt with some tough situations. The defense, like I said, fell apart last year, so he was just having to get into crazy shootouts. And you're going to make mistakes in shootouts.
I just don't know if he's mature enough. I mean,
he's getting on, though. If he's not mature at this point, I think it's...
Some of the stuff he does in games, you're like, do you think you're fucking Brett Favre? What are you doing?
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, Brett was doing that stuff when he was pushing 40. I mean, I guess some people are just, they're hardwired that way.
Yeah, but he's not Brett Favre. He's not nearly as good as Brett Favre.
Well, that's the thing. He was trying too hard. It was pretty obvious. Pretty much they put everything on his back every single game.
And I don't think he's that good.
No, when you've got an offensive line that was as bad as it was last year.
Oh, it was terrible.
They couldn't run the ball at all. So they could throw, but, I mean, it meant that he was going to get killed half the time. But at least they would actually move the ball. Rather than just go nowhere. So I think they did get better as the season went on. They could improve this year in that regard. For me, the question is the defense. I mean, the guys they brought in to run that, Kiffin and Rod Marinelli, I mean, these guys know what they were doing. I mean, they had more than a decade of defensive excellence at Tampa that produced that Super Bowl win and many playoff appearances. I mean, they're legitimately good coaches. But it seems weird to me that you bring them in when, you know, if they don't perform this year, Garrett's going to have to go because it's going to be three full non-playoff seasons for him as well as his little interim stretch when Wade got fired. So what are those guys going to go with the next coaching staff? Are they
Wade Phillips? Well, that's the problem too. That franchise has no continuity amongst the coaching staff, which is not good. I mean, that's just, if you look at any of the franchises out there that are successful for a long period of time, they all have continuity along their coaching staff.
It's one of those chicken and the egg things, isn't it? It's like, do you have continuity because they win? Or do you have win because they've continuity? You know, I mean, success begets success to some extent in the NFL. I mean, there's the draft and the salary cap that's meant to go against that, that's meant to give everyone a shot. And it does, you know, but at the same time, you look at certain teams, especially if they've got a great quarterback, and you get, you know, a quarterback coach duo, and then, you know, they could just keep shifted the pieces around that, but they've got that bedrock for success that kind of works every year. And it's true, the Cowboys, Romo's been kind of good enough to make them relevant all this time, but Jerry's tinkering around the edges generally hasn't been enough to get them over the top. But before we move on from this division, I do want to talk about the Eagles. They were one of those few bad teams last year, going 4-12. It was kind of, I found it to be really quite a sad ending to the Andy Reid era. Yep. You know, that it just went that awful, but he dug his own grave a bit with all defensive coordinator situation, and the offensive line was terrible. After Jason Peters, their left tackle, did his Achilles, and that kind of, it just killed them. Vic was, it was sad. Vic was getting killed, and
it doesn't matter how much you can run if the defense is literally in the backfield when you snap the ball.
No chance. He had absolutely no chance. He was never going to last the season. It was a kind of dead man walking situation. So now they get Chip Kelly from college, his heroic flight from NCAA sanctions, taking him to the NFL.
That's what I was going to say. A curious time for Chip Kelly to leave just before they get hit with sanctions.
There's nothing going on.
I've never seen that happen before with any coach that's ever gone from the college ranks to the NFL either. You know, it's really strange.
Or the NBA.
Exactly. Yep.
So, I mean, I watch a lot of college football. I mean, a lot of it. And I don't understand why commentators said, oh, well, Chip Kelly's thing can't work in the NFL, because it's not really about having more speed than the other guy. It's really more about having so many moving parts that at speed, it's hard to figure out what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And no matter how much you train, if at any moment five people could have the ball, that's still five people you have to keep eyes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like obviously they're trying to make you defend the entire field, but because they snap the plays at such pace, what you have is a relatively simple offense in many ways, but it's really, really difficult to keep up with it. And the Patriots have been influenced by what Chip Kelly was doing in college. If you look at the way the Pats played last year, you'll see that obviously the threat of Brady and the passing game is immense. So a lot of teams will play essentially a base nickel against the Pats. It's like, forget having three linebackers out. There's no point. We need the defensive backs to cover the receivers. But what they do is they trap you in that personnel setup. As they start running, hurry up, you can't get the linebackers or the heavier front players, the run stuffers on the field, and then they'll just run it on you. Yeah, and now they had a back like Ridley that was actually pretty good. They were one of the best running teams last year because people are so shit scared of the pass. And that's something that they took from Oregon.
Yeah. And I mean, after a while, you effectively just start running a zone.
Right. Because you have to. I mean, you're basically just saying, look, he's going to get, we'll give him 2 yards and figure it out from there.
Yeah.
Obviously, the beauty of that with the Patriots is that Brady is so good. He's so consistent. You know he's going to keep the chains moving. So what you're not going to have is you go three and out really fast and put your defense straight back in, who was still winded from the last series. And that's the question for me about whether Chip Kelly's offense is going to work in the short term, is that they have, we've got Vic, you've got Foles, and then they've got Barkley that they drafted in the lower rounds. So how's it going to map out this year? What about the longer term? You know, can they run this system? I mean, in some ways, the thought of Vic in that offense is a bit scary when you think of Vic at his best, but you just wonder what he's got left after taking
some of
these.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the Pats can do it because they have the personnel to do it, right? You know Brady's going to be incredibly accurate. Well, Brady is really who I'm talking about. Brady is extremely accurate. Vic is not accurate. He's never been accurate.
But the accuracy is not really as important here because there's not a lot of deep shots in this offense.
But I guess if you miss on a couple of third down conversions, though, that's where it hurts. You know, if it's just like, hey, you know, it was a 3rd and 5 and it was there, but you just missed it, and now the defense is going to fucking want to kill you.
It also takes away from Vic's strength, which is the deep ball. Right. He's really good at it. I mean, the guy has a cannon arm.
So for reference, last year, Chip Kelly's team at Oregon averaged 82.8 plays a game on offense.
Wow. Yeah, and in the first preseason game, they ran 85.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a game they ran where they hit the high 90s in one game. I mean, it's insane to think about.
The weirdest thing about that is there's so many, Oregon won so many games by convincing margins, you think they'd slow it down at the end. So how fast were they going at the start? Or, you know, it's kind of scary to think about. But, I mean, the other thing, of course, about the Eagles, unfortunately for them, is that Macklin had that injury right in training camp. I mean, it's right at the start. Training camp amazes me how people get injured right at the start. It's like, you're not even doing very much at this point. It makes me self-conscious. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about, like, tripping, going out of the door, going down the stairs. Because apparently, you could just tear your Achilles at any given relevant moment.
If you think about your Achilles,
it's gone.
You may tear it.
Yep.
It's like, it's really just kind of amazing to think about just the sheer insanity of that injury. You're like, how the hell did that happen? And you realize that, you know, maybe to an extent it's because these people do so much extreme athletic activity that they're both made hard and fragile.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure it's probably a cumulative effect with some of these things, but I think the Eagles are just going to be one of the most interesting teams. And I'm definitely not willing to say it's completely hopeless for them. It's just a bunch of stuff has to come together all at
once. I think they need at least a year to get it together.
That. I mean, that's the logical assumption, just with the, you know, it's so new. I mean, Chip Kelly's one of these. There's a big difference between Chip Kelly and some college coaches coming into the NFL because he has never worked a minute in his life in the NFL.
And there's not really a clean analog to what he was doing, unless you want to go back to like single wing stuff.
It's uncharted territory. It's going to be interesting to watch, but in terms of contention, yeah, probably a bit early for them. So let's just go around to, before we move on from this division. Division champions from Washington for me, James.
Football Messiah.
He had to go there.
I'm Washington.
So we've now officially doomed the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, unlucky.
I just think that most people that common wisdom would be to pick the Cowboys, but I just think that Griffin is going to come back. I think he's going to still be pretty effective.
You know, even if he doesn't, though, I know he's the backup, but I feel somewhat confident in what Kirk Cousins is capable of.
Although the Cousins won them a game last year that they had to win to get in the playoffs, and it was against Baltimore, who ended up winning the Super Bowl. I mean, that was not a mirage.
A team that does not like Washington at all.
No, it's a kind of rivalry thing because of the geographic.
And it's worse. It's a one-way rivalry where Baltimore cares so much more about it.
Yeah.
And those are the ones where, like, you just feel slighted by the whole thing and you want to injure them really bad.
My concern about Griffith's health, just a quick caveat before we finish off, is just that if you look at how successful the Redskins running game was last year, obviously Shanahan got a great pedigree with getting these fines lower down in the draft and having a fearsome running game. But I think a lot of it also has to do with Griffin. And I'm not talking about the fact that he will run for yards and pad the stats. I'm talking about the fact that when you have a weapon like Griffin, the defenses have to respect that at all times when they're defending the run. And so they know that he could fake the handoff and then run a count around the other side with Griffin and all that. So it keeps them honest. You know, I've seen it with Russell Wilson. I've seen it with Kaepernick. They take good running games and make them incredibly good because the defense is just, they're not playing full tilt. That doubt is in their mind that they're going to take a false step and then the quarterback's going to be 10 yards down the field the other side. And if Griffin is not where he should be because of his knee, that may mean that the entire running game and the entire offense is not quite where it was last year. That's my fear about it. But I think in general, Shanahan will get a productive offense on the field.
Well, and the Redskins lost their top two running backs going into last season. Ultimately, the person they put the weight on, who was a rookie.
Morris, right? Alfred Morris.
Yeah. Like, he was 3 or 4 on the depth chart. He was a 6th-round draft pick or something like that.
It's classic Shanahan, isn't it? Terrell Davis was a low pick, Alandis Gary, Mike Anderson, all these people at the Broncos had 1,000-yard season, or 2,000-yard season in the case of Terrell Davis.
But Roy Helu, who's coming back, is really good.
Yeah, I mean, they could actually upgrade. I mean, we don't know. This is the thing. I mean, the Redskins are a team that could get better in a lot of ways. That's the thing, because they're they were ahead of schedule last year, but it's just that one thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's that one Achilles.
Well, two ligaments in his knee or whatever it is.
Now we only talk about one of them.
Now we move on to the NFC North.
The NFC Norris.
The North Division, as Chris Berman likes to call it. So this division had 3 teams with 10 wins or more last year, which is quite a distinction. With Green Bay winning the division, Minnesota making the playoffs as a wild card, the Bears missing out at 10-6, and then Detroit on the really short end go 4-12.
Yeah. The shortest of ends.
After, you know, they had a 10-win season the year before and went to the playoffs. So you know, all these teams have been to the playoffs recently, have won 10 games. You know, that's not something that a lot of divisions could say. So it should be a really interesting one to watch. But mm-hmm. I get it all starts with the Packers for me, because I mean they have to be considered legitimate Super Bowl contenders. Not only did they win the Super Bowl back in 2010, but the year after they were 15-1, which has hardly ever happened in the history of the NFL. And then they blew it to the Giants in the divisional round, which is just something that happens apparently to them mm-hmm. against the Giants at Lambeau. You've got to think about them again, but I guess that the lasting impression that a lot of people probably have of the Packers last year is San Francisco ripping their trousers down and spanking them ridiculously.
That game was it was unbelievable, really, because you kind of had a feel for where San Francisco was with Kaepernick, but once that happened, there wasn't a question anymore.
It was an embarrassment, yeah. I mean, it was a shellacking.
Green Bay's defense wasn't great last year by any stretch.
No.
Yeah. He looked like an all-pro.
No. I mean, they were moving the ball at will. And again, it's part of what I saw. I just don't think I think they were paralyzed. They didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's not often that you see that you're watching a defense and you're saying to yourself, wow, this defense, it looks unprepared. Like, it looks like it's completely, like, whatever they're doing, they were not coached to even remotely handle it.
It's a bit of a running into the buzzsaw thing that happened there. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, for me, that's the thing about Green Bay, is everyone thinks about Aaron Rodgers. The passing game has been humongous. It's just incredibly productive. Because don't forget, they have not been able to run for shit during Rodgers' entire career, basically. I mean, they cannot run the ball. I mean, and yeah, they haven't had great backs, but it is more of a blocking problem. I mean, they've invested in upgrading the running backs this year, but I think it's still going to be limited because, I mean, the even worse, Bulaga, the offensive tackle, is another one of those mysterious preseason injuries. Yep. No one knows how it happened, so the prospects of the line getting better at run blocking is kind of taking a hit there. And that's it. I don't think Aaron Rodgers gets enough credit for playing with bad pass protection. I mean, that's what it is most of the time.
It's not good.
It really, I mean, remember that Arizona playoff game where he got absolutely demolished in that game, but threw for a ton of yards. A lot of the top guys, Brady, for instance, has mostly had pretty good line play during his career. I mean, the one exception would be Super Bowl 42 against the Giants, and that did not go that well.
His best offensive line is the referees. Boom. Nailed it.
No, he hates the refs now. Didn't you see it where he got jacked up by a ref during the Baltimore game?
the enduring image for me is still him pointing to the ground, a guy of a solid foot from his ankles.
when he had the foot raised?
Awful.
It was like, even if the guy had touched him, it would have been a 15-yard penalty, and yet he was so terrified of this that he had to threaten the man's reproductive ability. There's some great photoshops of that sort of put into Mortal Kombat with him doing like a Kung Lao kick. But yeah, we'll get to Brady later on. Anyway, the fact is, unlike pampered Brady, you know, Rodgers has had a terrible protection for quite a lot of his career, has still been really productive, but he has had really good receivers. That's generally been his luxury, is that they've got this deep, talented core of receivers. And that's going to change a little bit this year because Greg Jennings has gone to Minnesota. And of course, the question is always going to be, well, was Jennings ever that good? Because he had Brett and Aaron Rodgers throwing to him.
Yeah. Usually, historically, it's been mostly the quarterback and not the receiver.
Right. I mean, there's a handful of receivers out there you can go, yeah, like Megatron.
Yeah. These impact guys, they can be difficult because sometimes you just get a successful tandem and then it's always like, well, who's the real talent there? But yeah. I don't know whether Jennings, especially at this stage in his career, is going to make a huge difference. Although I will say he's been running his mouth a lot since he left for some reason.
A little bit.
You got to play for one of the proudest traditions in all the sports for me, but certainly in the NFL. And then you got to play with two great quarterbacks. One of them's going to walk in the Hall of Fame. Aaron Rodgers at every chance. What are you bitter about?
Yeah, what are you bitter about? And why are you talking? You haven't even played a game. with your new team.
It's like, you're playing with Christian Ponder now. He might not be able to cast those checks that your mouth is writing. So,
yeah.
I don't know what's his problem. But, yeah, I mean, I think the big thing for me with the Packers is they're going to be in the mix. It's just a question whether that defense can actually play some quality ball in the playoffs to help get them over the top. Because you think about Rodgers and how great he's been, but if the year they actually won the Super Bowl, the defense was in the top five. It was excellent. And it could, I mean, the championship game they won against the Bears, Rodgers did not a lot right in that game. He was pretty bad. The defense kept them in that game. So I think if they're going to get over the top, the defense needs to be better. And I don't see why it shouldn't be. I mean, Dom Capers is an experienced defensive coordinator. He knows what he's doing, despite the impression left by that San Francisco game. And they still have Clay Matthews. They still have Raji. You know, they have some good young corners. I don't really see why they've been so awful defensively at times in the past 2 years. And if they could get back to just good, just middling would be fine, I think. They could really threaten it this year. But we'll look at some of the other teams. The Vikings had a ridiculous season last year, a season which seems like it shouldn't be possible. Because
I'm not convinced it didn't happen. It is a collective, just complete imagination.
Adrian Peterson tears his knee in week 17.
It comes back better.
Of the previous season, which means it was actually like that calendar year. It was in January of 2012 that it happened. Then he comes back, and not only is he good, but he's so good that he nearly breaks Dickerson's record for rushing yards in a season. 6.0 yards per carry. Absolutely ridiculous. And more than that, I mean, they had so little in the passing game.
Well, I mean, everybody was afraid of Christian Ponder's great throws.
Yeah. I mean, Ponder, the thing is, it's easy to bag on Ponder, but look at what happened in the playoff game when he didn't play. Joe Webb shit the bed in a way that
I didn't even know who Joe Webb was.
Joe Webb.
That has seldom been seen in NFL history, just how bad that. So it was like a scientific experiment to rebut these people that say that Ponder wasn't given anything to do. Well, it could be worse, all right? It could be a lot worse.
Yeah, it could be worse. And in fact, it will be.
So, you know, that was tough for them. They worked so hard to get in the playoffs and then basically had no shot against Green Bay because they had.
They get webbed.
Honestly, that is. To me, that feels like the softest record I've ever seen.
But, you know, I mean, they had a tough schedule. They had the Packers in the division. They had the Bears in the division. They beat the Texans down the stretch who had 12-4. I mean,
those 10 wins just don't make sense.
It's hard. The thing about it, it does feel like the kind of thing like there's going to be a correction there, right? You can't have the best season a running back's ever had almost twice in a row, right? Like, it just can't. So, but I mean, maybe Peterson is just that singular. I mean, he's pretty special. And they did get Jennings, because I mean, their big weapon last year in the passing game should have been Percy Harvin, but he was injured for most of the season, and that's why it kind of devolved into Ponder just dumping it off to Rudolph, the tight end, which was just bizarrely productive.
And now Percy Harvin is now gone, but he's gone and gone to another team and just got injured on that team. So, you know, whatever. I guess it all evens out.
Yeah. I mean, the Seahawks paid a first-round pick to be his hip surgeons.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think they definitely go only as far as Peterson will carry them.
Yeah. I mean, they made some, I think, you know, draft-wise, I think they added some talent and all that. The defense should be getting better, so that might help them. But you feel like if they're going to talk about really contending rather than just getting in, maybe, or maybe just missing out, Ponder has got to bring more to the table than he's been bringing. Which, you know, I mean, he's a young quarterback. He may do that. And then they did sign Matt Castle from the Chiefs to give them a more credible backup option.
Yeah, now Castle, there's a guy whose star has certainly fallen. Remember when everybody was like, oh, well, you know, because he was behind Brady. And then all of a sudden, everybody was like, oh, he's been coached up and he knows what's going on and he's going to be a first stringer.
Well, he had that season where he played.
Well, when Brady got hurt.
Yeah, well, he had two 11-win seasons in his career, I think, or maybe it was 10 wins with the Chiefs. But, you know, one of them was with the Pats team that the year before went 16-0. So, right. I mean, it was a very good team besides Brady. And secondly, I know this because we're in the same division, one of the easiest schedules the NFL's ever created. We played the
it was a joke.
We played the NFC West and the AFC West at the absolute nadir of those two
when
divisions.
Those teams were so bad,
toxic
we considered...
wasteland of...
That was at the time when those teams were so bad that we as a group would just send emails about how terrible their games were.
No, and that's 8 games. That's half his schedule against terrible teams. So, I mean, the wins were kind of pumped up.
Not to bag on their division either. It wasn't a great division, top to bottom.
No, and then the other thing, when he was with the Chiefs, again, that they were actually in the AFC West then, so they got 6 games. So, yeah, I mean, his career is kind of predicated on the AFC West. But is he better than Joe Webb? Yes. So,
yeah, definitely.
I think it's a good thing for the Vikings to have. I do think they're going to find it kind of tough. But we'll move on to the Bears. Jay Cutler. The Bears have decided to try something quite radical, which is actually provide an offensive line for Jay Cutler. It's not something they've tried before.
I don't know. I enjoyed watching him just rant at his O-line.
In Cutler's defense, he looks a bit of a dick when he does that, but in Cutler's defense, they are shit. I mean, there is that.
I mean, the thing is, Cutler is kind of a dick. So yeah. There's always in the back of your head, like, are they just letting the defense get to him?
They are that. To be fair, if you saw how well they protected for Caleb Haney and Jason Campbell, they're in equal opportunities, bad offensive line. And they've finally tried to throw some stuff at fixing it. So they've got Lovie Smith's gone. He basically, his plan to fix the offensive line was to put it in the hands of Mike Tice, Super Bowl ticket scalper extraordinaire.
Mike Sex Boat Tice.
Yeah, I mean, and that did not go so well. And so Lovey, they went 10-6 last year, even with this terrible line, mainly because the defense was very good, the special teams was very good, and to be fair to Cutler, he did make plays for them in the past, as many as he could, to Brandon Marshall, all of them to Brandon Marshall.
Well, yeah, I mean, because Brandon Marshall's actually good.
No, that's the thing. Again, I mean, that's something they tried last year, was actually getting receiver as well. So they're slowly, they're getting closer to having a full
If we offense. Have players...
So that's the real question. Will a coaching staff that actually has a background in offense, and they've got Bushrod, who's the Saints left tackle, when they won the Super Bowl and up till now, and then they drafted Long to play on the interior in the first round this year. So it's a kind of investment that you haven't seen before. And so they're intriguing to me. You wonder whether Cutler with Marshall, Forte, a functional line, Alshon Jeffrey from last year's draft, they could actually be good. And then you say, well, you have a really good offense. What could they do? But the problem is, of course, you've taken away the bad things about Lovie Smith, but the good things may well be gone as well, because the defensive staff they wanted to keep, but they couldn't because they were all loyal to Lovie. So they've got a new coordinator in who's going to try and run basically the same defense, but you wonder, it's so technique driven and all that, I don't know whether it's going to be quite the same. And then you've got the issue of Urlacher's retired, Briggs, Tillman, Peppers, they're all getting a bit older, they're all drafted in the early part of the last decade. It's could the defense fall off enough to kind of, that the offense getting better doesn't quite make up the difference. They're another interested team, but it's difficult to be sure about them, as not to mention the fact that their new head coach comes from the CFL.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, he was actually tutoring a lot of NFL quarterbacks throughout the years, right?
Oh, he's been tutoring quarterbacks so long, he coached Bernie Kosar in college before he was saying salty stuff on Cleveland Browns preseason coverage. Bernie was actually a pretty good quarterback, and Trestman coached him. He coached at the Niners with Steve Young. He coached Rich Gannon at Oakland when they went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of known as a quarterback guru, and that's why they brought him in to work with Jay Cutler.
Yeah, work with Cutler, and also he's bringing Cromer with him from New Orleans, who was their line coach. So they're trying to address it on all fronts of the offense. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you just bring him in as a specialist coach then?
But teams do that a lot. I mean, they basically hire people to fix one side of the team, and then they have to be the head coach to do it. I mean, the most famous example has got to be the Buccaneers. I mean, Tony Dungy was not doing a bad job, but he couldn't fix the offense. So they fired him, they gave up the bounty for Gruden, and Gruden wasn't a miracle worker. He didn't make it to a great offense, but he made it good enough, and they won the Super Bowl. So, I mean, that's what everyone is always dreaming of, that you hire someone as like a troubleshooter.
Yeah, now, I mean, Trestman, it's not like he wasn't doing anything in the CFL. I mean, he won the Grey Cup twice.
No, he's got a good record. It's just, yeah. I cannot
how many,
think of...
How long before he gets a penalty for sending too many people out on the field?
I wanted a rouge. I was trying to score a rouge.
I feel like there's not many organizations in the NFL that would have the balls to hire someone from the CFL. Not because there's anything wrong with it, but it's not sexy. You know, it's not
this guy
was making Tom Brady's coffee, so he's got to be good. You know, which is personally, I think
he was photocopying the playbook.
He set up Bill's spy cameras. He must be good.
So yeah, I mean, that's I think it's out of the box thinking. I kind of like it for that reason, but whether it's going to pay off is kind of tough. And then we finish that look at this division with the Lions, who I cannot believe, similar to the, it's like the flip side of the Vikings.
They can't be this bad.
I can't believe that season happened.
They are, they beat the Redskins last year, but they are horrendous to watch.
But they might be the least clutch team you could imagine last year, because they can move the ball. The defense was actually middling, but the special teams were comically bad. Just
they were so bad.
Ridiculously awful. And then also, just red zone turnovers. You're just conspiring to lose games.
Yeah. They were like a whole team of Tony Romo's. There's the sick burn.
Everyone talks about the NFL now. It's a quarterback-driven league, right? You got the quarterback, you're sorted. Basically, everything else just slots into place. Stafford is so prolific. This is someone who's thrown for 5,000 yards in a season. That's hardly ever happened. No one's hardly ever done that, apart from when like three people did it in the same season, because the rules have gone crazy. But anyway, he's obviously a very gifted quarterback. Calvin Johnson broke Jerry Rice's record. They've got an offense that can move the ball. They've got a defense that's talented, especially up front, with Sue. So it just is baffling to me that they could be 4-12. Right? So
that team, I mean, it just feels like that team had maturity issues all over the place. I mean, you had Sue, who should know by now, hey, I can't stomp on dudes.
It's like, hey, there's cameras on me that might record anything I do.
And Stafford is notorious for having kind of head demons. I mean, maybe that team just needs somebody to be not an idiot.
The thing is the kind of thing you feel like a team, it's an expression that kind of gets on my nerves, but you hear it a lot. They haven't learned to win. But it's like, they had a 10-win season the year before. So they've been there. Yeah. They've been a team that capitalizes on what's good about it and made the playoffs. And so there's all the more vexing that how bad they were. I mean, there's a few ways you can explain it. First of all, just that the NFC is that tough, that the NFC has so many teams that are not pushovers, that if you are going to sort of conspire to lose games, teams will be happy to take them from you. I think that's part of it with the other teams in their division. The other part is just that they can't run the ball. They're another one of these teams, they throw it all over the place. The offensive line is decent enough at pass blocking to make that happen, but they can't run block for anything. And they've brought in Reggie Bush this year, who was surprisingly useful at Miami. I thought Miami at that point when he went there was not a great offense to go to. So the level of production that he had, I was quite impressed, because, he's a player that's so predicated on his quickness and all that. I wasn't sure, advancing a little bit in his career, how useful he'd be. But my opinion of Reggie Bush has risen a little bit. But the problem is just that if the Lions still can't block, then
he's the worst running back to have if you can't block.
Yeah, is he just going to start dancing in the backfield and losing yards instead of showing what he's good at?
I mean, to me, he makes the most sense getting the ball into the flat.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Stafford's all about the long ball. I mean, he's Rex Grossman-esque in that regard. I mean, he's just like, I want to shoot the ball downfield really far.
If they gave him more attractive targets underneath, he might throw to them. I mean, that's part of it as well.
No, I'm not throwing to you. Keep going. Just keep going.
But, I just feel like when a team's 4-12, normally, especially when there's so few bad teams in the NFC, you might feel tempted, well, that's a team that you can rule out. But the Lions, problem is notwithstanding, I'm not comfortable ruling them out.
I mean, they're probably the biggest wild card team in the NFL. You really have no idea how they're going to do. They should be doing much better than their record.
Oh, no, I think I have a wilder card, but we'll get to that.
Ooh, teasing. But yeah, I mean, I know. Is it the 4-12 team that shows up, or is it the 10-6 team from the year before?
I mean, I think that whole division, I mean, I look at these final records and let's be clear, that Minnesota team's not that good.
So you basically, what you say is Minnesota is just going to be a case of regression to the mean.
I don't think Chicago was a 10-6 team either. I mean, I watched a lot of their games.
Yeah.
There's something that wasn't right there. And I think the Packers were ultimately a little bit worse than they should have been. I think maybe that whole division was just messed up last year. I think maybe Detroit gets a little better just by merit of the Bears and the Vikings maybe not being
some wins just kind of get redistributed throughout the division.
And I mean, they're playing the NFC East. That's rough. That's rough.
No,
I think
no easy games. But you could say that about the entire NFC, really. I mean, like, I don't think we're going to do the NFC South in a minute. I don't think there's any easy games in that either.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I feel like each one of these teams has a gaping hole. You know, something that's just what could potentially be a fatal flaw, but you just don't know how that's going to play out four teams, right?
It's weird, but like, I'm ready to rule out the Vikings because I don't think they have a quarterback. I don't. I watch Christian Ponder play. I mean, I'm an ACC football fan. I watch Christian Ponder play a lot of games. I never thought, dude, that guy's going to make it in the NFL. I always thought he was a bad play away from just having a complete and critical nervous breakdown.
I mean, you do wonder what would happen if he's asked to do more. Could it bring more out of him, or would it be the end of him? You know, like, you don't really know until you've seen it, but it's time for us to put our cards on the table here for a division winner from this. So, James, who are you picking?
I'm going to go safe and go with the Packers because the only team that I look at and go, okay, I could see them winning a playoff game.
John?
This is a tough one because I look at the Packers and the Packers are the only team.
It's the safest bet.
They're the safest bet, and they're the only team where I can say that one part of their team is possibly the best in the NFL. The Packers offense is possibly the best offense in the NFL.
Well, and Aaron Rodgers is possibly the best quarterback.
For me, I just feel like the thing about the Packers is the running game and the defense. I've seen them be as bad as they could possibly be, and they still win 11 games.
Yes.
You know, like, it can't get any worse. So, yeah, they've got those weaknesses. I think if those weaknesses return in force, they might not be able to go all the way. But in terms of winning the division, they are.
Yeah, I'll go with the Packers.
I would have to pick that. I think they're the most likely. You know, I think teams like the Bears and the Lions, like, if it comes together suddenly, like, there's more moving parts there, but somehow if it comes together, like, they could contend on that level. But I think the Packers are the team that you can count on. So
yeah,
that's the only logical play. We now move on to John's home division. The NFC
right.
South.
Yep, the NFC South.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, the Atlanta Falcons last year won the division at a canter.
They basically could have taken the last month off and still been clean.
Yeah, but I think that they benefited from winning, from basically pulling a whole bunch of games out of their ass.
They are good at that.
they're very good at that, but the thing is that eventually did come back to bite them because they kind of seem to have developed this habit of leaving things right until the last minute and looking at Matt Ryan and saying, okay, buddy, we're down by three with a minute to go, so you just do your thing and win the game, okay?
Well, they had two of those games in the playoffs, didn't they? And they won one and then lost the next one.
Yep.
And that's kind of what you expect, really, isn't it? I mean,
yep.
It's not necessarily going to be much better than a 50-50 proposition when you leave it that close.
Yeah, John is still waiting on his Matty Ice tattoo. He's got to win that ring. It's actually just going to be Matt Ryan's head carved out of a block of ice.
It will
but,
be.
Yeah,
it
I mean, be. The thing is, he's had that nickname since coming out of college. And
it's such a dumb nickname.
But he has kind of lived up to it as much as you can expect him to. Like, some of those games they pull out of their backside as John. But, I mean, sometimes it's Cam Newton, like, going backwards and then fumbling the ball, refusing to get the first down that would win the game. Admittedly, I can't really credit Matty Ice for that one.
You say that, but you don't understand his psychic powers.
But that's the thing. I mean, he's proven that if you put the ball in his hands at the end of a game, he can get you. Now, why guys, I mean, I've seen safeties do very crazy things, and, you know,
yeah,
like the Panthers, I have no idea what the heck.
That Panther game was ridiculous, wasn't it?
That was comical. I couldn't.
It's another one of those things that falls to the. This should never happen in the NFL. Like this, right, this should exactly. be impossible, but somehow, fuckwittery has permitted it to be possible. It's yeah. amazing.
So I think that they definitely won a couple games that they didn't deserve to win. In terms of how they'll perform this year, I still have questions about whether or not they can stop the read option. I mean, they've played one game so far this year, and, you know, sure, it was there in there with their, you know, second, third, fourth stringers, but, I mean, they didn't show me that anything that they're doing scheme-wise is stopping the read option.
It's tough with the defense because I think, you know, they do have a certain amount of cap space tied up in the offense. It's not right. like you can just go out and fix it in free agency, insofar as any team could do that. Yeah. You know, they've let, you know, some veteran guys that had bigger salaries have gone. Abraham, who was still productive yep. on the line, that's quite a lot of sacks they've got in the backfield. Grimes and Dunte Robinson, you yep. know, these are not inconsiderable losses to a defense that was, you know, I think Mike Nolan came in last year and he did a good enough job. You're not going to work miracles with a group that hasn't got a load of talent.
Yep.
But he right. made it good enough and it complemented the offense. And like, he's going to have to do that again, but probably working a little harder. You know what I mean? But I think they can do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the one thing. I mean, I think their defense is really well coached. The thing is, you have a lot of inexperience there at key spots. Like, you know, they brought in Robert Alford. They brought in Desmond Trufant with their first and second round draft picks
yeah.
At cornerback. And theoretically, that was to plug their holes there. But and is that going
to
work?
That's what you've got to do, though. When haven't got the cap space, you know, to, mm-hmm. to do stuff on defense, you've got to draft those young players, develop and get them playing quickly. That's
still
right.
It's a roll of the dice, though.
No, it's better when you're counting on it this year. I mean, the problem is with the Falcons, there's this feeling of the window. You know, the window's yep. been open for a while. They've been the number one seed twice. You know, they yep. haven't got it done. Tony Gonzalez had one last dip in the swimming pool at a cocoon to be able to play again this yeah. season. You know, and it feels like it's a kind of an all or nothing year. So, yeah, it is kind of gap. Relying on rookie players, young players in a year like this, you'd like not to, but pretty much every team does to varying extents. I mean, that's just with yeah. the turnover that there is in the NFL. But, you know, I think with Ryan, with Julio Jones, Roddy White, you know, they're always going to be in there.
Steven Jackson makes our offense a lot better.
I like Steven Jackson. This is one of those cases where it's like, yeah, the offensive line of the Falcons is not as good at run blocking as it was when Ryan was a rookie, when it was still yeah. really good at that. But yeah. Turner did look done to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels like there was more yards to be had there with a back that's got right. something left. And Steven Jackson, who has toiled in obscurity in St. Louis, he's been a very, very fine player on absolutely shite teams for
yeah.
years.
And the thing is with him, what he adds is the fact that he can actually catch the ball out of the backfield. Regularly, he can do that. Whereas Turner, that wasn't really his forte, so they really didn't do it very much.
No, I like Steven Jackson a lot as a player. I think he deserves the chance to play on a contending team.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I mean, he's getting up there in age for running back. He's taken his fair share of shots over the years, but I think he could help, definitely. But mm-hmm. now, the other three teams in the division last year all went 7-9, which is bizarre, especially
it
some
is.
Of them started horribly and got better. And then in the case of the Bucks, they started quite well and then got horrible.
Even Josh Freeman does.
Yeah. They all kind of converge, but looking at them one by one in terms of could they this year, you know, sort of like I said, 7-9 is not very far away from the record of the teams that have been winning the Super Bowl lately. So
right.
you know, let's not rule any of these guys out.
But you know, I think when you have a division where there's all these 7-9 teams, you have to wonder, okay, where the hell did the wins go?
One thing I will say, I think they are, this division, the NFC South, is matched up in the AFC with the AFC East. It's not looking too hot. I mean, yes, the Patriots, all right, you probably lose that game. But the Jets, the Bills, Dolphins, more encouraging. But I mean, obviously, we'll get to this. But I think
yeah.
I think the NFC South is going to get the better of that overall.
Well, mm-hmm. But they have the NFC West. That's two games that are going to be tough.
Yeah,
and
well,
then
NFC West is more, yeah, that's 2-2, shall we say. That
right.
could be kind of
except the Cardinals.
Yeah, exactly. You've got a banker in the Cardinals. I know this.
Nobody in yeah. the NFC South going undefeated or going unwinning. Yay.
But So I want to start with the Panthers, because they're obviously Cam Newton, who has been thoroughly overshadowed by Griffin with the Washington Post.
Well, yeah, because he's not busy buying stolen laptops.
But, you know, he has been very productive since he got into the league. The main problem has been that, you know, the Panthers' defense has been kind of lackluster, even though they have a defensive coach, Ron Rivera, who was the guy that coached the Bears' defense in the Super Bowl in 2006. The thing is, though, if you look at last year, they started horribly.
They were awful.
Awful, awful, awful. One of the worst teams. And then got incredibly hot to get to 7-9. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that, similar to the Redskins, actually, they survived some early injuries in the defense. You know, they once they kind of got used to that, adjusted, the defense actually started playing quite well. Keekley was great last year as a rookie, and then they're getting Beeson back and the linebacker. They've drafted more up front, even though the pass rush was pretty good last year. At front seven, defensively, looks pretty good to me. So I think Carolina, if the defense is really good, Cam is good enough to win them quite a lot of games, I think. I don't know whether I want to say they're going to win the division, but they're going to be a factor. They might, you know, they might take games off someone else.
See, I just don't trust Cam Newton.
Yeah,
I don't
know. They look like a 6-10 team to me.
Ooh, that worse than last year, John.
Yeah, really?
I just don't trust his mental game. I really don't.
Do you think that, because some people have said this, I've heard this argument made, that the idea is that the dichotomy of last year was kind of like, oh well, once the pressure was off, Cam got better, because it's like, oh well, no one gives a shit because the season's over.
Right, because the season was over after week four.
No, I would submit it had a lot to do with the defense getting better, but he has to prove that wrong, I suppose, because they haven't been relevant yet.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's a very talented player, but I just don't know that he's got any kind of mental toughness. Even going back to college, he never showed having any form of the mental game worked out.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just more about them having the pieces around him on offense. I just don't think that they're there yet. I mean, it's him and a bunch of nobodies outside of Steve Smith, who is ancient.
I mean, one of the things that really baffles me is they spent all this money to retain the services of Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams, which is, you know, very few teams do that now.
Yeah, exactly.
Very few teams re-sign a running back at all. Like, after he's been playing for 4 or 5 years, most teams are okay. You've probably had your career now, see ya. But to retain two is bold, and they have not got the production out of those guys yet, and certainly not last year. Again, you could point the finger at the offensive line, but they need more from that. Considering the receivers are not great, they at least need more out of the running backs.
Yeah, I do wonder what the purpose of re-signing the running backs was.
Look, they were good players. I mean, you know, they were productive, but it's a salary cap league. You know, I mean, you have to make these kinds of decisions about what positions are worth investing in, because that opportunity cost is always there.
Wide receiver.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I mean, for all that they did, I mean, those backs only had 1,000 yards between them.
Nowhere near good enough, is it? I mean, again, the bad defense early in the season, it takes you out of running the ball a bit and all that. You know, so there's some extenuated circumstances, but it's not. They've got to get better in that regard. I feel like they could be hovering around 9-7, maybe be a spoiler kind of team. There is another question to be answered about whether they can really win the division, but the next team has won the division recently and won the Super Bowl in 2009. That's the Saints. And of course, the Saints last year were one of those teams that got off to a terrible start. And you have to think a lot of that had to do with the fact that two of the most senior coaches were suspended because of the whole Bountygate thing. They did get better as the season went on last year. So you think, well, you know, Sean Payton's going to be there from the start this year. You know, things should be better. But one thing I have to say is that the Saints defense last year may have been the worst defense to ever set foot on an NFL field.
They were so bad.
It's incredible. I mean, there was a game last year early on. You're playing the Chiefs, who went on to have the number one overall pick. You are going to win this game if you don't let Jamaal Charles run for 200 yards. If you just limit him to 180, you're going to win the game.
If you just give him the best game of his career.
You're going to win the game. You know, as long as he doesn't threaten, you know, records or anything, you'll be fine. Oh, no, he has Ravelli on and you have lost the game. I mean, just ridiculously bad. Like, again, the kind of stuff that you just intuitively feel should not happen. And they were being coached by Steve Spagnuolo as the coordinator of the Giants when they won the Super Bowl. I mean, it just breaks your head to think, yeah, you know, there's all these people, they're competitors, they know what they're doing, they're trying hard, and they're that terrible. It boggles the mind.
I mean, they were giving up 5.2 yards per rushing attempt.
Yeah.
Statistically speaking, that average means they could never stop you.
Don't forget, they've got an incredible offense there with Breeze. Helping them out. They're having drives. They're scoring points. They're giving them every advantage. And they still can't just get off the field, make a turnover, do something.
Yeah. I mean, look at this. I mean, this tells a story right here. I'm just looking at them on ESPN. They were number one overall in the league in passing yards. In rushing yards, they were 25th overall. Opposing passing yards, they were 31st. Opposing rushing yards, they were 32nd. So basically, it's Drew Brees and no one else on the field.
How are you statistically the worst in both categories?
Yeah.
And yet they were still 7-9. You know, like, yeah, they weren't, yeah, a terrible team. They were they lost some close games. They probably should have won. You see, it's another one of those things where you feel like, well, Jesus, they can't be that bad in those regards again, can they? And so they've brought in Rob Ryan to run the defense, who you presided over a Dallas defense that had some nasty episodes last year. But Rob Ryan could coach defense. I think he had a tough run at Dallas with injuries, and maybe he tried too hard with multiple formation stuff. But I think he could improve it. And also, there's some synergy there because, you know, both he, when they won the Super Bowl, the Saints, they were under Greg Williams defensively, of course, before the bounty game, before the disgrace thing. And Greg Williams' defensive philosophy comes from Buddy Ryan, of course, who was Rob Ryan's dad. So I think this, right, yeah, in terms of the Kaiser cornerbacks, I think, you know, Jabari Greer, who they got from the Bills years ago, he can play that scheme. They've got a chance to be better. They don't have to be great. Just be not terrible, and you're going to have a chance.
Just be not the worst ever, and you'll be better.
Yeah. I mean, I think having Peyton back will also be huge. I feel like, you know, when he kind of got put on the bench by the league, I thought, okay, well, you know, they're still a really good team, and you know, they're not going to fall off too much. But the amount that actually did impact them, really, I didn't expect it.
See, I think it's just a convenient excuse. I think their defense was going to be atrocious regardless of what happened.
Yeah, it's hard to think that it wouldn't have been that bad. But at the same time, maybe Peyton would have been more empowered to do something about it, you know, like fire a position coach. I don't know, do something.
Yeah, I mean, I also don't think there was just Peyton. It was a whole distraction around the entire team. The whole thing was just kind of a cluster.
Maybe. I don't think they were winning that division, though. I think at best they were a 500 team. I think that defense was so ungodly awful.
It was atrocious.
It made for some really fun games to watch.
No, I mean, they were involved in some absolute riots, you know, shootouts. I remember the game against Green Bay that they played was crazy.
You can't play Aaron Rodgers with literally no passing defense.
Oh, no, but I mean, you know, they were victimizing the Packers' dodgy defense as well. It was
yeah. like in that game against Green Bay, Breeze had 446 yards passing.
And they lost.
Like, honestly, that's Tech Mobile.
This is how crazy the part of it's just the way the NFL is now, the rules, the emphasis of what you can't do. But
and actually, Breeze had 446 yards passing twice last year against the Cowboys as well.
Right. Well, again, Rob Ryan. Yeah, that's not so encouraging.
Irony rears its ugly head.
Well, let's round out this division with the Buccaneers.
Oh, God.
Another enigmatic team.
No, they're not. They're just bad.
Yeah, these guys are really interesting. Because, again, if you're looking at one problem with that team, it was the pass defense. And this is a team that last year, you know, after having been kind of dormant for years, just not spending any, like, back, you know, like the uncapped year where there was no floor on the salary as well as no ceiling, they spent nothing. They spent like, you know, they were trying to kind of work their way down to the Houston Astros payroll.
As a National League Central team fan, no. You don't want to do that.
But this, in the past couple of years, they've started spending it. Last year, it was Vincent Jackson. This year, they've gone for defense because that was the problem. So you've got the trade for Darrell Revis, and you've got Deshaun Golson coming over from San Francisco's backfield. So, yeah, they've tried to fix the problem. It's just a question of whether it's going to work. Because, I mean, the offense, I thought, was ahead of schedule last year. You know, you look at the Doug Martin, what they call it, the muscle hamster or whatever, he's running all over the place. And
that's what I call mine.
Freeman was really hot to start with, and then cooled off kind of sharply.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about Josh Freeman.
That's exactly it. I'm the same way. I don't really know.
That one year where he was amazing.
Yeah, and everybody was like, "Oh, he's going to be the next big guy in this division." But now, I don't know.
It's consistency, isn't it? I mean, that's what he doesn't have at the moment. Is it a case that he would get more consistent with experience, or is he just always going to be that guy that could be great on any given day? But he's
I think this is the year he either needs to step forward or they need to cut bait.
Yeah, I mean, this will be his fifth or sixth year in the league.
So his good season was two seasons ago, and he's had two middling seasons since then.
I mean, they were bad. The year that Raheem Morris got sacked and all that, I mean, it was a bad situation. He contributed to it, but it all kind of crumbled. Yeah, they started the season okay. I think they were something like 4-2, and then they were 5-11. I mean, it was a total.
They just went and just hit the skids.
So, I mean, there's a couple of seasons there where the wheels have come off a bit, and I get, like you said, I think this is going to be it for him. They probably feel like the team around him is pretty good, and so he's going to have to get back to that level at least he was when he was younger. Otherwise, because it's the opportunity cost, isn't it? You know, for every year. Yeah, you think about all those teams that thought they had maybe an answer at quarterback, so they didn't draft Aaron Rodgers in 2005 when he slipped.
Right.
And you think about what that cost you.
Well, even people who are more concrete commodities, I remember hearing people say that the Rams completely blew it by not trading Sam Bradford and going with the number 2 pick last
season. Griffin. I mean, obviously they got the big bounty in return, but was he so good that you just say, screw it?
And Bradford is a way more established quantity than Josh Freeman.
Well, the thing is that Bradford's only played for bad teams, at least.
That's true.
It's kind of tough. I mean, you know, I've seen him play, I've seen some encouraging things from him, but it's tough because we'll get onto this momentarily, but their receiving core has been so barren for years, the entire time he's been there.
I mean, and that goes to my point, though. Like, I would, right now, I'd rather have him over Freeman.
Maybe, but I mean, I think the Bucks are another one of these teams that they could be a good team, but I just question whether the record can be that good. You know what I mean? They could be better than last year, but be like 8-8 or 7-9 again.
They could be better than last year and be 6-10.
Because if the Saints have returned to form and Atlanta are still as good as they were before, that's what's going to make it tough. You know, will you get those games off them that they did last year? That's the question for me.
I mean, them and Carolina for me, and sort of together, really bookend a division that makes no sense. Mm-hmm. Because there's two teams in the middle of that division, Atlanta and New Orleans, that should be pretty decent. Carolina could be really good or could be awful.
Yeah.
And Tampa Bay could be exactly the same. Like, their ceiling, both of them probably have a ceiling around 11 wins. But their floor is unlimited.
Yeah, well, I'd say it's about 4 wins would probably be the ceiling, or the floor, I should say.
Yeah, well, because who would have said that Detroit were going to go 4-12 after 10 wins last year? You know, but it's like some of it's going to come down to luck with injuries and all that. If you're just the odd man out in a division, it can roll on top of you pretty fast, even though fundamentally you might not be that bad. Like I said, the NFC is just so damn competitive. There's going to be some good teams with losing records. I feel like that's kind of just mathematically inevitable.
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel like the Bucks could, in theory, not them predicting this, could potentially challenge for their division if we get 2 years ago Josh Freeman. But if we get, you know, 1 year ago Josh Freeman, they could be
the big thing as well is just that, wins. You know, we talk about knee rehabs and stuff. Revis, he's coming off the knee situation.
Yes.
Admittedly, he got injured a lot earlier in the season than people like Peterson and Griffin. Again, though, I think it's unfair to go, oh, well, It's not ages to recover. He should be, you know, play like an all-pro week one. You know, that's not how it works.
But, I mean, even before he got injured, it wasn't Revis Island anymore.
No, but I think that was kind of more just the general Jets malaise. But, no, I mean, look, you don't necessarily have that long of a window to be the best cornerback in the NFL. Like, that generally is not something that lasts.
Yeah, not everybody's Champ Bailey.
Yeah, Champ Bailey's, like, one of those guys that was the best cornerback in the league for a long time. That's rare.
To do it, you have to be a real skill-oriented cornerback more than just physical freak show.
And avoid some of the nastier injuries, probably. I mean, you know, that
luck.
Definitely a bit of fortune involved. But yeah, I think the pass defense will be better. Just, you know, another year along in the scheme.
Definitely.
But whether it's decisive is another matter. So let's wrap this one up by going round and saying who we think's going to win.
I'm going to say the Saints are a lot better, but their defense is still going to keep them just out. So probably Atlanta by a couple games.
John, you got to go with Atlanta, surely.
Yeah, I got to go with Atlanta, but, you know, with some caveats there. I mean, I have questions about their defense still, questions in particular about their pass rush. I have questions about how their cornerbacks are going to actually perform.
John, you just described every team in this division.
It's a real convergence, isn't it? I mean, it could be.
The thing is with them is that they're very close to getting to the Super Bowl, so it's, you know, you start like kind of picking holes in them, right? Like,
right, you're kind of equivocating.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely the most complete team in the NFC South.
They've never had a losing record or even a non-winning, you know, 8-8 with Matt Ryan. I mean, 9-7, and they missed the playoffs that one year. That's the floor for the Falcons with Matt Ryan.
Right.
So you know they're going to be in the mix. For me, I think it could be a total toss up between the Falcons and the Saints. Could be tiebreakers. You know, that close. I'm going to pick the Saints just to be kind of somewhat contrarian, but the Falcons are going to be in the playoffs. I could just, there's no way right. I could see them not being in the playoffs.
Yeah, bear in mind, all of these teams, they all split their games last season.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with Greg. I mean, I could see the Saints being much better than they were last year. I think they will be much better than they were last year. I mean, I could see this being at the top. You have the Saints or the Falcons, one team being 11-5 and one team being 10-6. I could see something like that.
No, you're 2-11-5.
So I just think the Saints defense has so far to go.
It's a legitimate point. But like I said, you know, you don't have to be great. You know, the Falcons defense last year wasn't great, but it is passable. But I know it's got a long way to go to be passable. I mean,
the thing is, these teams, a lot of these teams, when they play each other, you can just throw all that stuff out the window.
Well, no, you could, because it'll probably go for 52 yards if you threw it out the window against the Saints last year.
No, I mean,
I've just seen too much weird stuff happen.
But it's not just when they play each other. They've got 8 games at a conference. And
That's true. But I'm just saying.
If you're playing the NFC West and your defense sucks, that's 2 losses. You're not going to beat the 49ers with shitty defense.
No, I mean, the NFC West, which we're coming on to now, it's got 2 teams which are legitimate contenders in my mind. You've got the Rams, who are another one of these teams who were sub-500 last year, but they've got kind of intrigue surrounding them.
And they had a tie last year, which is amazing.
They nearly had 2. They nearly drew with the Niners twice, which would have been amazing. But the Cardinals are just the saddest sack in the NFL.
They really are. So
they have no hope at all this year. It's brutal. I mean, they
may be worse than they were last year.
Don't forget, they started 4-0 last year and then went.
I know! They went an unbelievable 1-11 to finish the season.
They were terrible. Really terrible. I mean, the offensive line play was just unimaginably bad. And as soon as Kolb went down, who could actually move a bit, forget it. Every quarterback was dead on every play, and they couldn't run it either. And the defense, which, you know, performed admirably trying to keep them in games, ultimately, you know, it only goes so far. And this year, new coaching staff, they've got Carson Palmer in, who, you know, has his merits as a quarterback, but at this stage of his career, him playing behind that offensive line, it's just a matter of time before he gets hurt. So I think the Cardinals are the rare team in the NFC that I'm just kind of ruling out now. Let's just kind of forget about them for the time being, I must say.
Yeah, they're going to be terrible. I feel bad for John Abraham, but guy has to eat.
But the Rams, who did show some promise last year, and of course they have had all these draft picks that they got from the Redskins for Griffin, and they could kind of stockpile in players there, young players. They do have, you know, a highly touted quarterback in Bradford. The defense, Jeff Fisher, you feel like he's going to get that in the right direction sooner than later. So they've got a number of things going for them, but the problem for me in terms of competing at this level, where you've got San Francisco and Seattle, the offensive weapons are not there. You know, I mean, Steven Jackson is gone, as we mentioned earlier, to the Falcons. And then Amendola, who is the one receiver that they could get anything out of, has gone to the Patriots. And yes, they traded up for Tavon Austin in the draft. Took him 8th overall. He's, you know, exciting prospect. But again, counting on receivers when they're really young, you know, even some of the guys that turn out well at receiver take a while. It's not a plug-in-and-play position as much as running back for me.
Right. I mean, it depends. I mean, if the person is basically just running your Randy Moss routes, which is just go, just run straight, that's one thing. But if you expect somebody to learn routes and know how to work the offense, that's a relatively cerebral thing to put together.
And again, I mean, if you're going to be more of a complement, you know, if you had established receivers and it's just, okay, well, you at this point, you know, early in your career could just like complement the established receivers by providing a vertical dimension, they can do that. But he's like the number one receiver as far as I can tell. Like they really do not have much else there. So, I mean, I like the direction that the Rams are going in, but it definitely feels like a year too soon for them with the Seattle and San Francisco in that division.
Yeah, I think those two are just way too tough.
No, and that's what this division's all about. Seattle versus San Francisco. It came very close last year. It was decided by the fact that San Francisco had a tie instead of a loss. That's what it came to. Seattle got red hot. You know, they started a bit, you know, Russell Wilson playing as a rookie. He was not that electric early on, and he was entitled to not be that electric early on. You know, he's just starting in the league, playing some pretty tough games. But when they got hot, oof, they looked so good. And of course, they gave the Falcons the absolute fright of their lives in that game. That was crazy, thrilling playoff game. That was an amazing game. But, you know, this year, we talked about they got Harvin, but that's kind of, you know, that didn't go so well. And then they do have some issues with players getting suspended. There's some sort of Adderall culture up there.
Yeah. We just have real attention problems. I mean, I think it's partially the black side of having Pete Carroll as your head coach.
Yeah. It's, hey, man, it's like, this is how they do it in California, man.
Yeah.
It's cool. You get some Adderall. You just kind of hang out.
It's the same sort of stuff. I mean, not the same problem explicitly, but the same sort of stuff that the noise you hear around that program is very similar to the noise you heard around his USC team, which he ran very much like a pro team.
Mm-hmm. Too much.
And people hanging around the program that shouldn't be there, players having contacts with people outside the program that look a little shady. And usually that stuff, if you see that much of it, there's something going on there that is waiting to come out.
I mean, one thing I have to say about Pete Carroll that surprised me since he's come back into the NFL is, you know, you kind of felt like a guy like that when he comes over to the NFL. Not only is he going to get paid an obscene amount of money, which he did.
Oh, he got paid so much
money. One of the highest paid coaches in all of US sports. But he wants the power. He wants, you know, as Purcell's used to put it, he wants to buy the groceries, right? So he demolished that roster. There was very little left of the Holmgren era by the time they had 1 year under Carroll. He just ripped it up, totally turned it over. And yet here we are just a couple of years later, and it's one of the best rosters in the league. To be honest, I didn't think that you would oversee that. You know, I think you get these college guys, you worry about them being control freaks and not, you know, having the best players, you know, get maybe players that they feel comfortable with or this, that. You know, I like a traditional GM model for acquiring talent most of the time.
But, you know, how he ran that USC program and where that program was at the height of his powers, he was basically drafting with all the number one picks. I mean, he basically just walked into a kid's house and said, I want you on the team. And he had a 50-50 at worst chance of landing that kid.
Yeah, and you don't get that in the pros. You know, you don't have some sort of disproportionate recruiting power.
But at the same time, it did force him to sort of do the GM work because he couldn't just throw scholarships around and just hope he gets what he gets.
No, I mean, that's why they want it, because they've been wielding that kind of power before and they don't want to give it back. But Pete Carroll, you know, obviously, as, you know, I'm sure he delegates to his personnel people and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think he deserves a lot of the credit for how good they've got so quickly. It's pretty remarkable. And then, of course, you got the 49ers, who are, for me, probably the best team in the league the last 2 years.
Yeah.
They've been, I mean, their loss to the Giants must have been a heartbreak in 2011. That, you know, with the punt went off the guy's arm or leg or whatever it was, you know, and then they, I mean, because the Giants offense was going nowhere, and that's the only way we're going to get points of some crazy play like that. Yeah, it must have hurt a lot. And then, of course, last year they get to the Super Bowl, but they can't get it done. It's, they have been agonizingly close. And for me, I think the defense is not going to be quite as absolutely brilliant as it's been at its best over the past 2 years, but they can compensate for that if Kaepernick takes another step. If he's, you know, he's, you know, really inexperienced coming in the middle of last year. I mean, he's a second year guy, but he didn't play for a year and a half. And then all of a sudden he's charged with taking a team that, you know, they've been to the championship game. So the only, you know, Super Bowl is it. That's the only measure of success. And he got there. You know, that's remarkable. I mean, I think it says a lot about how good they are as a team, but it also says something about him. And obviously this year did some things. They brought Bolden in from Baltimore, I think has still got some usefulness in him, but that's kind of checked by the fact that Crabtree suffered an off-season, pre-season injury. So that's kind of tough as well. So I find it very difficult to separate them and the Seahawks.
I think what's really amazing is you look at the fact that these two coaches had relatively nasty goings on, playing almost exactly the same part of the country as college coaches, went to the NFL, and both really improved the standing of two franchises in that same footprint.
Yeah.
And now get to play each other again.
I would say it's a great rivalry that's taking hold. I can't wait. I think it's the second week of the season, NBC, Sunday Night Football. That's gonna be brilliant. Yeah. But Harbaugh's interesting because they did not rip up that roster. I guess the Singletary coaching staff really sucked because
they did. We know that.
You know, yeah. Alex Smith, the defense, Crabtree, you know, Vernon Davis, these Frank Gore, Staley, you know, these people were there. They were there. They were in the building. They were bad. And then Harbaugh comes in and they're good.
I think it's a reflection on where those coaches were, because at USC, like I said, he could pick whoever he wanted, so he's used to building teams to fit his image. You can't do that at Stanford because there's a certain standard that player has to meet to even be eligible to enroll there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Harbaugh's definitely better at coaching up players. I mean, I think
he had to be.
He's the kind of coach that can make teams overachieve.
It's like the closest thing you're going to get to like a laboratory experiment of like, what difference does coaching make?
There's a lot less suits on the sideline.
Let me clarify. It's a laboratory experiment about how much difference coaching makes when choosing between former Bears players. They just realized we chose the wrong former Bear. We were close.
The only way we can wrap this up is by bringing in Ditka. That's the only way we can wrap this up.
So then, I guess, I've said I find it really difficult to pick between Seattle and San Francisco, but we're going to have to do it. So, James, who have you got?
You know, I think Seattle, because I think part of San Francisco, part of what gave them life was that quarterback change. I think Alex Smith had been entrenched there for so long and had never really lived up to his promise.
You feel it was kind of a lightning in the bottle thing? And that,
right. I think emotionally those players who had suffered under the regime of Alex Smith were more than happy to be freed from the aura he emanates.
What about the idea that if teams get more film on Kaepernick, you know, that you're less likely to get the Green Bay situation where it just seems like they don't have a clue?
Yeah, see, I thought the same thing. And I was like, oh, well, they're just going to look at last week's film and figure them out. And then it became, oh, well, they're just going to look at the last two games. And then it was like,
but here's
the
thing.
Last three.
This is the same shit that Colin Kaepernick ran in college.
Yeah, but dude, they couldn't stop him.
Every single game he played for Nevada was on ESPN in some form or another.
See, that's the thing. That's what made their win against Green Bay so unbelievable to me, is the fact that I was like, what are you doing? I mean, you've sat here and watched this quarterback play this way, and you're still not stopping it?
And they blew a bunch of teams out. I mean, they did.
Yeah, I mean, it blew my mind watching him. You know, first week, I kind of get it. But, you know, I saw a lot of his games because the WAC got, like, Friday night ESPN games, Wednesday night ESPN games. You know, weird places to put football games. And it's like, did you people not do any homework? This is the shit he does.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's like I said, when you've got that run game with Gore, it's so good by itself. You know, yeah, it's a bit of a pick-your-poison kind of problem. And I think that whether teams are going to start catching up to some of this zone read stuff this year, it's a big question. It's one of those sort of macro-level questions about this NFL season that's going to be interesting to see because, you know, I mean, copycat league, all this kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, like the Wildcat stuff we had for a couple seasons.
Oh,
yeah.
God, that was terrible. Thank God.
It really was amazing.
Thank God that ended. Again, it's like, don't get too excited about what Miami did. They were playing the AFC West and the NFC West that year, too. It was not that exciting. Trust me, I lived through it. Barely. Did we get a final verdict?
Yeah, I think I put my faith in Russell Wilson.
Okay, he's going Russell Wilson, John.
I'm going 49ers. That team is too complete.
It's very complete. It's impressive. But, you know, I'm also going to go with Seattle. I just think they were so hot last year.
I think the biggest concern for Seattle is that the smoke stuff that's floating around that program.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's Bruce Irvin's already suspended for the first four games. That's one of their young pass rushers, and that's a big thing about what makes their defense so good. The defensive coordinator, Gus Bradley, by all accounts, is a real star in that sort of Tampa 2 style of defense. He worked for Kiffin at Tampa. He's got to be the Jags head coach. So there's some question about, you know, I mean, sometimes teams survive those transitions very nicely, and sometimes they don't. I mean, the Bears, when they lost Ron Rivera in 2006, were awful with his replacement, Bob Babbage, even though they had Lovie Smith as their head coach. So losing coordinators should not be ignored. That is something to consider with Seattle. But I just look at how hot they got last year. And we talked about Kaepernick, how hot he was. There was one team that absolutely demolished San Francisco, and it was Seattle.
And you know what? I think part of it's because you see more of this option read stuff in college.
I think Seattle were better prepared to stop that than anybody else. And that's going to be, and I mean, San Francisco will probably be relatively well prepared to stop Seattle. I mean,
Pete Carroll has been coaching against Oregon for years.
Yeah, I tell you, it's a great rivalry. I cannot wait to see that play out. It's going to be one of the most fun things about the season next year.
Yeah, if you have access to it, go back and watch some of those Nevada games where they scored like 70 points. And you'll just go, oh my God.
So I've going for Seattle to win the division. There we have to be completely clear about who's going to make it as wild card. For me, I've got to go with San Francisco as the wild card, given that Seattle wouldn't win the division, and then Atlanta as the wild card from the South, given that New Orleans would win the division.
Yeah, I would go with the opposite of that. I would go with
flip
of that.
I agree with you from the NFC West, but I think that Eli Manning's not missing the playoffs two seasons in a row.
It's the Giants are just so vexing. I mean, they could totally get in the playoffs. They could win it all again. I mean,
I mean, they were 9-7 when they won the Super Bowl.
If they could play all their games on the road, they'd be undefeated.
Well, that was more the first time they won the Super Bowl, but
if they could play
all their games in September and October, like that's been the recent. They've been lights out in the first half of the season.
I think part of it's because I expect the Cowboys to be worse this year, and I don't expect the Eagles to be much better.
So you think
I don't...
the Giants' record can climb up to a wild card level?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, I could totally see that happening, but I guess it's just this middling fudge that the NFC East did.
I don't know. If you give up 300 yards a game just passing, I'm not willing to let you move up.
I think that's a very respectable viewpoint, just to, like, if your defense is that shit, I'm not giving you the benefit of the doubt.
That doesn't even include their rushing yards.
If the NFL was the way it used to be, 10 years ago, I would have agreed with you wholeheartedly.
If you gave up 300 yards passing in 2003, you're doing something very wrong.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, nowadays, I mean, seeing how bad that Packers defense was, I mean, it was historically bad.
Yeah, but they played this weird, like, I mean, part of it was because they were just moving down the field really fast. I mean, to an extent, you could say the same thing about the Saints last year. They were getting 300 yards a game as well through the air. So...
Yeah, no, I mean, there's not that much garbage yards in there because a lot of it was they were actually close games. You know, they were just shootouts. Yeah. It wasn't like, oh, well, we're 30 points down and now Breeze goes crazy. You know, I mean, they were in games. They just ended up on the wrong side of most of it because they just couldn't stop anyone.
Right.
Yeah.
So that is the NFC. We've covered half of the NFL.
Wow.
And that's it. You can probably not even bother. What if you're a fan of an NFC team? You can,
or if
probably
you're
just
a fan of good football.
You can just skip.
Because the AFC is a dumpster fire.
Yeah, we're going to get to the AFC in the second half. And it's...
I love the phrase dumpster fire. It's so great. It's so visceral.
It's not as fun to talk about as the NFC, so it should be a little bit brisker. But anyway, join us back on the other side of this break for that absolutely mouth-watering prospect.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
We begin this week with impressions of Yakuza 1 and 2 HD by Danny Bivens. Oh goodness, a very mature Wii U exclusive has you hustling maid cafes and shiny suits. Sega's brought its popular open world title to Japanese Wii U's. If you want it in the West, you better kidnap your local Sega executive.
Who's probably in Europe.
Yep, that's where it's all based now, yep. And in our review mini, we have Warrior's Way on 3DS by Justin Baker, one of the Mii Plaza games. This one lets you build an army of Miis based on who you street pass with. Sadly, it's a function of who they street pass, so if you live in a place with infrequent street passing, your army, well, it won't work out that well for you.
All right, and we have a preview of Wonderful 101 for Wii U by James Dawson. We know you've been waiting for a Wii U game where you collect colorful minions from the world and use them for battle and to solve puzzles. Well, there's Wonderful 101 too. What the hell is making Nintendo's release schedule?
Well, you buy one, you get some 30% off in Europe. They've realized the synergy.
These games are really similar, guys.
All right, and we have a review of Mii Force for 3DS by Neil Ronahan. Another Mii Plaza game, but this one is a scrolling shooter where you get a robot and Miis, and it's good.
We also have a review of SteamWorld Dig for 3DS by Don Koopman. What started as the totally not overcrowded DSiWare tower defense space, the SteamWorld series returns to Nintendo handhelds with a robot world-exploring platforming adventure. No rusty gears here. Don loves it, and I'm sorry.
Surprisingly sort of banal from you, James. You're losing your head, son.
That's okay, I'll make up for it here. Lastly this week, we have a review mini, Harvest Moon on the Wii Virtual Console. This is the Super Nintendo original, by Andrew Brown. After working all day in the field, it's always a relief to go back to my recently domesticated wife, my completely useless dog, and sleep in my 16-bit bed. Just so I can get it up and do it all over again.
Freudian slip.
Oh, damn it. Stand in. Hopefully today the chickens don't wander out and get sick in the rain. Harvest Moon, Virtual Console. Reviews.
Scene.
All this content and more, including the latest news, previews, reviews, and impressions, yes, are on the site at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Welcome back to the second part of debatably fruitful NFL 2013 season preview with the AFC. But yeah, before we move on, I do want to say it's a great thrill to be back on RFN. I miss being on the show terribly. It's one thing I don't miss is the fact that it's been so kind of depressing in the Nintendo space with the Wii U. So, you know, normally you get to this part of the show and it's listener mail and there's all these questions about, you know, whether the sky is falling with Nintendo and stuff. So
I can go dig one up. I've got like 40.
Even though I miss being on the show terribly, I'm kind of glad I don't have to deal with all that kind of stuff. It's nice to be able to chat with the two of you again about something genuinely uplifting like Buffalo Bills football.
Oh, That punchline was slow developing, but I appreciate the setup.
Unfortunately, the Bills' difficult launch is 13 years and counting. But
how many games are the Bills actually playing in Buffalo this year?
7.
Oh, hey!
Yeah, well, you know, if you have to give away one to keep the other 7, I think the people of Buffalo will take it. But they'd also take a better team playing there. Hopefully that will be the Bills sometime in the not-too-distant future. But yes, we're going to start this conference with the AFC East. And we may as well work our way up here, because there's only one team really in it, as usual.
Miami Dolphins.
But yes, there's the Bills, who are rebuilding again, trying to break their NFL longest standing streak of 13 years out of the playoffs. That's right. We haven't been to the playoffs since Al Gore was the next president of the United States.
Oh. See, it's the curse of the Al Gore. There you go.
Maybe that's it. Yeah, it's the curse of Florida. You know, it's the curse of the hanging Chad. But, so, it's been, you know, it was an absolutely miserable year. Last year, they got a new head coach. They got E.J. Manuel, 16th overall. Most people seem to think it wasn't a good idea. But most people just want to see them give the ball to Spiller more, because he had the same average as Adrian Peterson, but not nearly as many yards.
Right.
You know, I think it's going to be an interesting year for the Bills myself, but not a winning one. They might be a bit better than people think, but even then, I think you're probably talking about 7 wins, which would sadly constitute progress, because we haven't won 7 games since 2008.
I think getting rid of Chan Gailey was a mistake, only in that they didn't do it before they hired him.
Yeah, well, to be fair, when we hired Gailey, it was kind of like we couldn't get anyone else to coach the team.
Look, they would have been better off hiring us to be the coaching staff. Chan Gailey had recently been fired from Georgia Tech.
And then from the Chiefs as coordinator as well. So
I mean, Greg could be GM. I could be, whatever, defensive coordinator. James, you want to be offensive coordinator?
I want to be head coach. I want to get at least one flag every quarter thrown in my general direction.
That's okay.
But yeah, at least Doug Marrone, who is a very rare coach coming from college that is not fleeing NCAA sanctions.
No, he's fleeing the fact he was playing in Syracuse.
But he seems like he actually wanted to coach the team. So right. That's...
So that's a plus.
That's where we're building.
So I will say, though, you know, again, speaking as somebody who follows college football very closely, Syracuse was an abomination under God.
When he got there, yeah. There was the Greg Robinson,
For decades. I mean, since Donovan McNabb was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, though.
Calling him a dumpster fire would be a disgrace to dumpster fires. They were the equivalent of if you actually put their stupid-ass orangemen on the field to play football. I mean, that's what they looked like, a bunch of mascots lined up to play football. And he got there and they won. And I was convinced, absolutely convinced, he was going to do something stupid and draft his Syracuse quarterback.
Oh, loads of people were convinced. Like that, yeah. That was a widely held belief. And then, you know, they went with Manuel, which to me, I kind of, you know, having not seen anything of Syracuse, you know, or anything like that, for me, I didn't like that idea at all, because it just feels like your imagination is that lacking. You know?
Right. No one is better than a guy who went to Syracuse.
But of course, the thing is that Miami did that with Tannehill the year before. Right. You know, that they had not the head coach Philbin, but the offensive coordinator Sherman had worked with Tannehill in college, and so they kind of paired them together again. And you know, the results so far have looked somewhat encouraging for Miami. So there were the people pushing it from that angle. But look, I have no idea whether EJ is going to be a good quarterback in the long run. Naturally,
I've seen a lot of EJ Manuel again in college, and I was never really that impressed by him, so I'm not entirely certain it was a great pick, but to me it shows a certain amount of confidence in himself to not say, all right, let's just draft the guy I know what I'm getting.
It's a good, yeah, I like that part of it. But
so if EJ Manuel doesn't work out, you know, I don't think it's the end of the world if they have to go after somebody
else.
It's
I mean, everyone wants them to play him fast, so it's just like, let's find out about this guy and then move on. You know, that's kind of, whether that's healthy for a quarterback's development is another issue.
But it's not.
With EJ, The one thing I like is that he seems like he's got impeccable character and leadership and all that kind of stuff. So it seems like, look, if he does have a chance to be good in the league, he'll take it rather than waste it on whatever.
He completed like the third highest degree of difficulty, which was be the starting quarterback at Florida State and not get in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one of those years where you just, the record isn't that important. You're looking for just encouraging signs, particularly from the quarterback for the future, but also the defense, because we've got a new defense. We kind of poached Rex Ryan's defensive coordinator from the Jets, and the defense has been wonderful, which has a lot to do with Rex Ryan, but it's been in the top 10 every year that this coordinator, Mike Pettine's been working. So I'm hoping that, I think there could be a miniature version of San Francisco's defense on our hand, from the point of view that I think our defensive coaching under Gailey was terrible.
He's never had a good defensive system in place where he was a head coach.
So I think there's definite room for improvement there. Now let's get on to those Jets, which...
they've already crashed.
I feel sorry for Rex Ryan at this point. I really do. Because there is no way in hell he's getting out of this alive in the coaching sense. I mean,
he's
rided two consecutive non-playoff years where the offense has been the problem, but you know, he's the head coach, he's responsible.
Right.
And now he's supposed to break that streak with a Dallas style complete revamp of his entire coaching staff. Everybody's different. Special teams, he lost his defensive coordinator. Marty Mornieweg's coming in on offense. The receivers, the cover's still pretty bare. Running backs, nothing to write home about. Offensive line seems to be declining. And then Sanchez or Gino?
The Sanchez.
Oh, so Mark Sanchez may be the most hated person in New York.
The problem is, though, is like, I don't feel like you want to go to Gino straight away.
No.
Because if you do, then people are... You know, it's a bad offense. There's no reason to think that Gino Smith could play well straight away. So
you don't throw that guy to the wolves.
I don't want to call Gino Smith a system quarterback, but he definitely isn't from the world of Marty Mornieweg.
But Marty Mornieweg goes back to a West Coast background. He's been with Andy Reid. When he was at the Lions as the head coach, very briefly ill-fated coaching stint, but he was, you know, it's West Coast kind of all the way. So yeah, I mean, from what I hear about what Gino is doing in college, is a big transition. And I just think, if you put him out there and he's bad, which, like, I mean, he's no right, you've no right to expect him to be good considering the rest of the offense is poor, then people are just going to be baying for his blood. And then what, you go to Sanchez again? I mean, it's...
I hope you go to Sanchez again.
I mean, pretty much both of those quarterbacks are pretty shaky from the perspective of having confidence. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I look at Sanchez, who to me just seems mentally broken.
I got two words for you. Butt fumble.
Yeah, the butt fumble that's what I'm talking about. I mean, yeah, in his rookie year, that Jets offensive line was so good, that never would have happened. But
right.
I mean, the supporting cast has been getting worse, not better. I mean, that's the thing. When he was in his rookie year, they were a defense-driven team. And it's like, if they could just get some receivers and all that, you know, this could be a Super Bowl team if Sanchez gets better. But it's just they've gone backwards. I mean, the personnel, and again, this is nothing to do with Rex Ryan. The personnel management has been terrible. So they fire the GM, but now they've hired a new GM. And it's like, you really think he's going to keep Rex Ryan around once this year is the dumpster fire that it's going to be? Like, no, he's a dead man coaching.
You'll hear that phrase a lot in this segment.
I do feel sorry for Rex. I mean, he puts himself out there to get mocked, but you know, he has been hung out to dry here, and a less proud man would probably have resigned because they are not giving him a chance to win. All he's there is to fill time before the GM hires the coach he really wants next year.
Do you think they're tanking?
I think the organization has set Rex up to fail. I mean, Rex is going to coach. He's going to try his best. The players are going to try, but they're set up to fail, especially when the AFC East may not be a great division, but you ain't going to win it being mediocre.
No.
You're not going to do a Denver with Tebow. Because New England are there and they're going to win 12 games sleepwalking. You know, so it's over for Rex Ryan, but it's not over. He's got to put up with a 4-month funeral. And I think that's a sad way for it to end.
Especially because of how close he got them, though.
I know. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they win back-to-back championship games is astonishing. I mean, it's one of the coaching achievements of the decade.
In a way, I feel like they almost flew too close to the sun too quickly. Like, they got...
They thought they were closer than they were.
Sanchez saw so much success, and the team became so... expected success so much that so much attention was on them. They lost the one thing that's great about being in the Jets. You have the Giants to get the media attention off of you.
Yeah, no, they drew more attention to that. Yeah, with Rex's big personality and
yeah, they became the ultimate tabloid fodder in New York for sure.
Yeah, they were the lightning rod, and I mean, they still, you know, they still are even now. You know, they get more attention than, you know, considering the Giants like won the Super Bowl again not long ago. You know, it's kind of crazy.
It's kind of insane, but that's the world they live in.
It's, I think that's the Jets kind of sorted. So the only team that has any real chance of challenging New England is the Dolphins, because like I said, they had this
Ryan Tannehill.
They had a year last year where Tannehill, you know, he was not Andrew Luck, he was not Griffin or Russell Wilson, granted, but he was commendable for a rookie. Again, supporting cast, nothing to write home about. They traded Brandon Marshall. They had no real ambition last year. It was a development year. And he did develop. He got better as the season went on. This year, perhaps also in a cynical attempt to manipulate people to get a more favourable stadium deal with the local government, they started spending a lot of money in the free agency market. And so they did get Tannehill a target. With Mike Wallace from the Steelers, the burner, and a bunch of other guys as well. We were signing all sorts of people, improved the defense too. So there's things to like about the Dolphins, but you can't think that they're going to compete with the Patriots for the division. It's just too far off.
I think record-wise, it'll look a lot like last year. The Patriots well ahead.
I think Miami, ultimately, they need to improve on things like their line.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that everyone was kind of saying that Jake Long, you know, the guy that Bill Parcells, when he was running the show there, took over Matt Ryan. Thank God! Right. You know, in the 2008 draft, yeah, they were saying that, you know, he's not as good as he should be. He's not, you know, maybe he's actually fallen off from the start of his career. But he was still the left tackle, not all of last year. I think he missed quite a bit of time. But, you know, they've lost him in free agency to the Rams. Mm-hmm. And that's still a problem. Like, maybe he was getting too much money. Maybe he got drafted too high. But he was not chopped liver. And, that is a concern, the pass protection.
I think the problem for all the teams in this division, and I include New England, if by problem I mean in having a record that repeats what they did last year, is that these teams have the AFC North and the NFC South.
That's tough.
Any team that keeps the same record they had last year in this division should consider it a success. Because I think you had to be better to get the record you had last year.
No, I agree with that. Like I said, if the Bills get to 7 wins, I think it's probably been success. I mean, it depends how you do it. If it's all on like bizarre special teams flukes or something, like I'm not going to start jump up and down. But yeah, I agree with that.
Yes, special teams coordinator. Woo!
You look at Miami, and I mean, they're playing at Indianapolis, obviously at New England, right? But they're also playing at New Orleans, at Tampa Bay, at Pittsburgh.
Oh, God.
I mean, yeah, it's so...
That pretty much, for me, snuffs out most opportunity for a wild card to come out. So New England, we've clearly reached the consensus that they're going to win the division again. But how far are they going to go? I mean, the thing about New England, we think of the fact that they won 3 Super Bowls, but they've kind of become the great Neely men. I mean, since winning those 3 Super Bowls, they've been in the playoffs almost every year, apart from the year that Brady got injured, and yet haven't won it. In all those years, it's starting to rack up since 2004, the last time they won. And again, the question is, why? Is it just bad luck? Is it just the helmet catch? You know, or is it that there's something missing from the Pats, this latter-day Pats?
You know, there was that stretch following the Spygate. And you could argue, oh, they've lost Spygate. But there was that stretch in the post-Spygate era where they just seemed to want to brutalize everybody.
Yeah, that they was the immediately following it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they had a game against the Redskins that year.
But Bill Belichick acted like Joe Gibbs slept with his wife. I mean, it was
It was awful. And when they got to the playoffs, I don't know, it just seems like you can't play with that kind of negativity. I just feel like it can only fuel you so far. And I wonder if they've never really recovered psychologically from where they were.
From missing out on 19-0. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the Pats are another one of these teams, a bit like the Packers, that have had excellent records, papering over the fact that the defense has been shite. Now, statistics can be somewhat misleading from the point of view that good teams will give up garbage yards, as we say. Yards where the other team is three scores behind, so you just let them move up the field as long as they don't do it too quickly, and you're still going to win the game. But New England's defense was at a level that they weren't about garbage yards. They just sucked big time.
Yeah.
And the idea 10 years ago, if you tell me Bill Belichick is going to have been coaching a team for nearly 15 years and the defense after all that time sucks, I would have been incredulous. I mean, he was the defensive mastermind. The Giants, when they won the Super Bowl in 86 and 90, what he did with the Jets with Parcells. Even Cleveland, he wasn't a success as a head coach, but they had some good defense. It's like he's missed a defense, and yet somehow, somewhere, he's forgotten that, or they've got too much cap room in the offense, and he's not good enough at drafting defensive players because he wields the power. I mean, it's somehow the defenses are just not what you would expect.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, well, I think over time you've seen the effect of other teams raiding their front office.
And I don't think these raids, I mean, some of these raids, we joked about them at the time, were as if Bill Belichick was being Gary Bettman'd. That's a joke, people who understand that Stern used to have Gary Bettman as his lieutenant before Gary Bettman absolutely destroyed the NHL.
I mean, for me, like, yeah, McDaniels destroyed Denver. Pioli was not who was the head personnel man at New England when they won all the Super Bowls, and then he went to be the kingpin at the Chiefs. I mean, they built a playoff team. He didn't do everything wrong. I mean, I think where he made a big mistake was hiring Todd Haley as their coach, because he was a control freak. Charlie Weiss does a great job for him, so he's fired.
It didn't make any sense because Charlie Weiss was doing what he's good at.
That guy was nuts, as far as I'm concerned. I was always skeptical of what the people hire people like Pioli, just because what the halo effect, because they've been near greatness. But it seems like actually he might have been something to do with why the Pats were that kind of three Super Bowls in 4 years. It was just something seldom ever been done. But are they going to contend this year? Yes. I mean, obviously they're going to be in the playoffs, but I think they're going to be serious contenders just because the AFC is not that strong. There is not an abundance of other teams to keep them out. And the other part of it is that I don't think this receivers crisis is as dangerous for them as perhaps others do.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Hernandez situation is a huge problem when Gronkowski, the other tight end, has this series of injuries. He's coming back from back surgery. It's the worst possible timing. And they've lost Welker, who's been catching 100 balls a year ever since he got there.
That kind of takes me back to me thinking that maybe they haven't psychologically gotten past that just running off venom thing, that Welker had that bad a relationship with Bill Belichick despite catching 100 balls a season for him.
I think the problem is that Belichick perceives that he is an eminently replaceable part, and obviously Wes Welker doesn't share that sentiment. But I actually agree with Belichick. I think Amendola, that they've signed from the Rams, if he stays healthy, which is his problem, I mean, he has not stayed healthy very often for the Rams, so that's not a minor caveat. But if he does stay healthy, with Brady, as long as the rest of the offense is so affected by these other, the tight end situation and all that, that it's not at its normal level, he could put up enormous numbers.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You've seen that with their backs, too. I mean, half the time, the backs for the Patriots, I don't even know who the heck they are. But they're out there churning up yards,
To be fair, their running game was putrid for about half a decade.
As I said earlier on, when we were talking about kind of hurry up offense.
Lawrence Maroney, yeah!
The running game last year actually did get good. It's much more a case of passing to set up the run, or the threat of the pass sets up the run. It's not like teams go into games in dreadful fear of Stephen Ridley running all over them. They're worried about Brady. But you want that compliment. And they're starting to get that. So I think they're going to have enough offensively with the consummate brilliance of Brady behind them.
To me, at receiver, you overpay your deep threat and you overpay the guy that the quarterback uses as a security blanket. So speaking from a Redskins perspective, Griffin and Pierre Garçon got on the same page quickly. Granted, they're already overpaying Pierre Garçon, so... But when he comes up for contract again, you overpay him again because They get it. They're together.
I know. Yeah. I mean, there's a chemistry element, isn't there? As you said, I mean, that's
especially for that guy that you're doing the short routes for.
Yeah, timing has got to be crisp. Look, maybe Belichick just blames Welker for dropping that pass that effectively would have won the last Super Bowl they played in against the Giants. But that chemistry that they built up over those years, you can't replicate that straight away with Amendola, however good he might be. But who was Welker when they got him? He was a nondescript return man that Miami thought was so disposable that we're willing to trade him within the division, and then he torments them for 5 years.
Exactly.
Well, maybe he was running off that venom too.
Yeah, well, Miami walked into that one, but this is what can happen when Brady's at the controls. He can make guys, you know, incredibly productive. Yeah, they have their merits, but it's Brady that brings that level of production out. And don't forget, I mean, they went perilously close to going to the Super Bowl in 2006 after they traded Deion Branch, at which point they had, I think the word is, bupkis at receiver. Nothing.
Oh, it was awful.
And they were still, you know, if
Deion Branch was the highlight of their receiving
yeah,
corps.
And then traded him away. So they had absolutely nothing, barring a Colts comeback in the championship game. They probably would have won the Super Bowl because I think Brady would have outdueled Rex Grossman.
I don't know. Rex Grossman may have outdueled him for the panties of the ladies, though.
Maybe in bed.
So the Pats aren't going anywhere. They're going to be right in the mix. You know, it might be like Baltimore. I mean,
Super Bowl quarterback Rex Grossman. Thank you.
That happened, James.
Last year's Baltimore team that won the Super Bowl was not the best Baltimore team. It probably wasn't in the top three Baltimore team in the last 5 years, but they got on a roll and they won it. You know, it's kind of enough bullets in the chamber, tickets in the lottery, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, a little bit of a gift from the Broncos there.
Yeah, the Broncos kind of get an assist on that one.
I think ultimately what helped them is they were a team that had a lot of experience on defense and they had a lot of time to prepare for the read option.
Yeah, I mean, we'll move on to the AFC North now. We may as well start with Baltimore because it's a really interesting thing. I mean, this is a team that, but since John Harbaugh got there, has been a perennial contender. And what I mean by it is not just making the playoffs, but they've won playoff games every single year with John Harbaugh and Joe Flacco together. So it's weird to think that this year, having just won the Super Bowl, I kind of feel like they won't do that this year, but I don't think they will.
They lost so much.
Yeah, they did. They lost a ton.
It was almost in the vein of the old days where teams tried to push the salary cap a lot more, like really kind of backload contracts and mess with it as much as they possibly could to kind of load up for the window, you know, the championship window. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when it's time to pay the piper, you have to blow the whole thing up. And with Baltimore, it's not that extreme. Obviously, the veteran guys, Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, they're both gone. But it goes way further than that. You know, Bolden, Ellerby, it's just, there's so many.
Pollard is gone, isn't he?
Oh, well, my favorite player, but I'm
fine. Yeah, your favorite player is gone.
Brady is so thrilled.
That hit that he put on Ridley in the game.
Yeah, so for those of you who are just listening for the fun of it, Bernard Pollard is literally the devil to Patriots at this point.
He's a Patriot killer.
He has injured more Patriots than probably everybody in the league combined.
This guy, him and Eli Manning are like my personal heroes.
I think he knocked out 2 Pats in 1 game once. I mean, it's unbelievable.
He's a top bloke. But with the Ravens this year, they've also had to re-sign Flacco, which, why wouldn't you after what he's done? You know, I mean, he really proved himself last year, and he's a great playoff quarterback. You know, he's kind of like the anti-Romo for the people that don't like Romo. He seems to really deliver.
Well, I mean, the difference between him, if you went to use that comparison, is he's got the big arm.
Oh, mm-hmm. God. I mean, he could throw the shit out of the ball.
Yeah, he really can.
His closest parallel to me is Jake Cutler, but I think the difference is between the ears.
Yeah, I mean, he's just very calm, and you never see him get too high or too low. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, I feel like he gets kind of made fun of for that almost. Like people want him to be this big personality kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you see him do like a promo or something, he's the most awkward person on earth.
But I think, you know, whatever doubts there were about Flacco, like, well, he's had the good defense, he's had the running game, he's had this, that. You know, I mean, he put that team on his back last year and made it, because the defense was not as good as it was when Pagano was running it or when Rex Ryan was running it.
And they were old.
Yeah. I mean, when Ray Lewis came back and all that, it kind of got going a bit, but it still wasn't dominant or anything. But the offense, once Caldwell, the former Colts coach, took it over, just went to a whole other level. It got ridiculously hot. So you had to re-sign Flacco. He's won the Super Bowl. He's won playoff games every year. But it costs a lot of money.
They should have re-signed him. They should have re-signed him last year.
Exactly. That was...
Well, Flacco, to be fair, I mean, he kind of bet on himself and cashed in big time. So, you know, well played to him and his agent. But the fact is that now, that's a big chunk of cap space.
I think the biggest development there is that we know Caldwell is actually alive.
Yeah. Because you had the wonder.
Because I remember he was in Indianapolis and just thinking, that man is being Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah. I don't think I ever saw him smile.
I don't think I saw him blink.
Yeah, I don't know if he ever had an expression on his face aside from that 1,000-yard stare.
But, you know, the point is they had Flacco's production before was on a mid-first-round pick salary, which is chump change for a quarterback. Now he's getting nearly elite-level money. It's going to be tougher for them from now on to put a good team around him because it is a salary cap league. And
And you saw that in them losing Anquan Boldin.
Bolden's gone. There's a lot of the veteran guys. So it's going to be up to Ozzie Newsome, who is undoubtedly one of the premier GMs in the NFL, to rebuild it with younger players. And that's going to take time. I just think in a competitive division like this, I don't think Baltimore are going to disappear. They're going to be a competitive team. But are they going to be good enough to win this division this year? I don't think so.
I think there's too many challengers in here. I mean, even the Browns could steal at Baltimore. I mean,
let's talk about the Browns a little bit because, you know.
Because Brandon Whedon!
They're a lot like the Bills in terms of they're in the Rust Belt, where Pittsburgh have apparently got an exclusive license on winning games. And they've suffered through rebuilding all the time. And this is another go at it with Chudzinski, the coach now, who is not a household name. But let me remind you of something. This guy got a 10-6 record and eye-popping pass numbers out of Derek Anderson in Cleveland.
Oh, God.
Who, if you've seen him play since then, looks like the worst quarterback who's ever lived. I mean...
No, he doesn't, because I saw those Cardinals games last night.
Yeah. He's played for the Cardinals. Like he's been responsible for some of those games. I mean, it's just... That seems more miraculous with every passing year. So I think this guy...
There was a Derek Anderson year... I mean, that just doesn't make sense. Like, an alien took over his body.
Yeah, I mean, and I think Chudzinski, you know, his coach, he would have to qualify. He was the coordinator at the time for Cornell, Romeo Cornell was their coach. But, you know, his coach, he has to qualify as like, wow, he did something right there. This guy...
And Romeo Cornell is an awful head coach. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
He is an abomination.
So it's all on Chudzinski to run the offense, and he did a very, very commendable job. So I think he's clearly got offensive credibility. And then you've got his coordinators. Now, he's got North Turner as his coordinator.
Oh,
But don't forget, offensive coordinator is what he's good
though.
At. That's what he's good at.
Exactly. I totally agree.
But
it's like somebody should have made Norv Turner. They never should have made him a head coach, ever.
But he was head coach for like half a decade.
It doesn't
make any sense.
It doesn't mean that it's right.
But he's back where he belongs.
But he's gonna find a way to mismanage the clock even from the booth.
Welcome back. It's welcome back, Turner, man. Welcome back.
Oh, God. Norv Turner needs to step away from the league for a year, minimum.
No, he's a great offensive coordinator. Just think about it. I mean, granted, he had personnel with the Cowboys, but still.
I don't trust him.
I mean, him and Chudzinski together, that's a credible offensive coaching staff.
It is, definitely.
And then defensively, they got Ray Horton, who was the coordinator of the Cardinals defense last year, which performed admirably in the face of atrocity
They were basically the Romanian army standing up to an invasion from the Soviets and the Nazis at the same time.
I feel like you look at that triumvirate at the top of the coaches that I like it. I really do. I know it's not sexy like Chip Kelly, you know, and all that kind of stuff, but you've probably never thought of Chip Kelly that way before, but you know what I mean.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't trust Brandon Whedon. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, the coaching staff is one thing. If we look at it this year, for me, it's all about Whedon. It is the shit or get off the pot. That's what we're...
Which is unfair because he's not... I mean, it's only his second year.
But the problem is he's pushing 30. He's going to be 30 in October.
He's not going to get any better than he is right now.
You've got to find out, because like I said, they may be picking high next year, and you want to know...
they'll be picking high next year.
Whether you've got to think about drafting another quarterback or not, you need to find out. So it's going to be a case...
See, to me, I think the mistake was drafting Whedon, because he was never that great, even in college.
Well, of course, Whedon was, shall we say, the booby prize in failing to land Robert Griffin. I mean, that was...
Yes.
Holmgren swears up and down that he was offering a better package than what actually the Redskins offered.
Well, is he going to give them the team?
Well, don't forget...
You can have the whole team.
They had the pick from Atlanta for Julio Jones, so like he might well have been telling the truth, but he says that the Rams did that deal because Jeff Fisher and Shanahan are all buddy-buddy. Now, whether they would say that, because there's probably a lot of Cleveland fans that want to crucify him for not getting Griffin. But
yes,
you do wonder how things would be different if they had Griffin right now, but they don't. And Whedon, some people thought it was kind of a reach, whatever, but you only compound the mistake if you don't come to a decision quickly about whether he's worth keeping or
That's
not.
True.
So that is, for me, the whole point of this Cleveland Browns season.
I think... Not selling the future on Griffin selling the future on Griffin for them would have been a mistake, because they didn't have the pieces. The Redskins were, even though they had a worse record or had a terrible record that year, were closer in terms
of. They got injured. I mean, the Redskins had injuries that year. It was artificial.
You can't mortgage the future if you don't have anything, because you need those picks. I think picking Brandon Whedon was the mistake, because you can say in retrospect, obviously it is, but I think everybody always knew Russell Wilson had higher potential than Whedon. If you're that far down, hell, just roll the dice. Go for it.
But like, loads of teams passed on Russell Wilson.
I know.
Multiple times. Like, everyone passed on him because he went in the third round. But I mean, like, there's always this kind of fit. You know, the Bills fell into this trap. We missed out by one pick on Ben Roethlisberger. Supposedly they were going to take him. Steelers taking one pick in front. So what do? Trade back into the first round to take J.P. Lossman.
Oh, cool. I mean, even his name should tell you not to draft. His name is J.P. Lossman.
The sob story's not nearly over yet, because that first round pick that we gave up to trade up to that spot would have been right in position to take Aaron fucking Rodgers the next year. So these are the sorts of mistakes you could get yourself into when you miss out on one quarterback and you kind of rush to get another one in the same year. You know, sometimes it's like, if you miss out, maybe you should just accept that and not try and force it and reach, because then you dig yourself deeper.
Exactly, because then you have to see if this guy's going to work.
The opportunity cost.
Yep.
Well, see, I think they knew... Or I think they should have known they could have waited on Wilson and then used the first round pick to get something that wasn't Brandon Whedon.
And also, it's just strange to take someone that old. I mean,
it is.
The shelf life is limited. It's all very odd. But of course, that was all a previous Browns regime. It's complete, not just the coaches. Holmgren's out, his GM is out, and all that. They got Mike Lombardi, who used to work for Bill Belichick at the Browns.
Well, he used to be in Cleveland in the same position too, right?
But that was when you had Belichick there and Saban and Cronell, like all these people that went on to be head coaches and so were all in Cleveland who weren't good.
Because he and Belichick got sacked at the same time, didn't they?
They all got cleared. They had one playoff season, but to be fair, no quarterback.
Right.
It's just amazing though that they had this like all-star coaching staff and front office administration if you project forward, and yet they weren't at that time a particularly good team. But I have a big soft spot for the Browns because they have similar misery to the Bills, so I'm always hoping that they do better. And again, it's just you want to see encouraging signs for this year. I think the division's too tough for them to really make noise in, but you want to see them make progress in a way that they haven't, and hopefully get something out of Richardson, because that was an expensive pick for a running back. Very few running backs go that high these days because of the risk of injury and all that. You have to be really special. So hopefully Richardson can be that special. But for me, the division is a fight between the Bengals and the Steelers. I kind of feel like it's a bit of a coin flip between the two. Anybody disagree?
See, honestly, I've never felt great. This is going to sound really stupid, but I've never really felt great about Ben Roethlisberger.
The multiple Super Bowl winner, Ben
Roethlisberger. Well, no, but see, I can explain this, though, because I never get out there and watch him and feel like, yeah, he's really dominating this game.
He's a strange sort of fella because he doesn't operate with that consummate ease that the premier passers do.
I don't know. I just always feel like that Steelers team is ready to take a step backwards.
Look, the thing with Ben is that, you know, he is great at making the best out of a bad situation offensively.
Makes the bad situation.
Yeah, well, I guess the question is whether if he did have a Rolls Royce of an offense, would he actually be able to make it go? But the thing is that Pittsburgh have not got that anyway, so it's kind of moot. Last year... They drafted David DeCastro at the first round to try and fix that offensive line, which has been the problem. I mean, even when they won the Super Bowl in 2008, where Ben was a big part of it, the offense was critical in winning that Super Bowl, but the offensive line was bad then, and they drafted DeCastro to help fix it, but then he tears his knee in the preseason, and it was every bit as bad again, and then Ben Roethlisberger's getting hit, he gets banged up, he misses some games. They lose games they should never lose with backup quarterbacks, and then they miss the play. And you could just trace a direct line from that preseason injury to them missing the playoffs. So the question is, if they get some better luck, do they get back in the playoffs? The only question I have about that is the fact that the defense is getting kind of creaky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they looked the part last year.
Yeah. I mean, in general, they're just getting older and older. But, you know, they've always been the one team where it's like I've never really expected them to do as well as they ever have. But they just kind of find ways to win.
I think the defense is kind of incredible because for a while people say players are getting older, and they are. I mean, that's just a fact, obviously. But last year, there were some games where people would say, oh, you know, not looking as good as they normally do, though, are they? Guess what? They ended up finishing number one in yards defense again by a significant margin.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just that no one's playing that good a defense anymore in the NFL, but the Steelers play it as well as anyone somehow. And a lot of that for me goes down to Dick LeBeau, the coordinator.
That's exactly it. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say you can throw any offense out there, but with the Dick LeBeau defense, I mean, you're always going to be in there.
They are going to be in the mix. But then the Bengals, they've got a quality defense too. Mike Zimmer that runs their defense, excellent coach. For them, they're hoping that Dalton is poised to take another step. You know, he's been good from the start. You know, that's another case of a rookie being thrown in there and swimming rather than sinking. They've been to the playoffs with him. No one would have thought they would have made the playoffs in his rookie year. But he and AJ Green, AJ Green, really special talent, have struck up that chemistry, the partnership. But the thing is, they're hitting their heads against a brick wall because they're playing away. Playoff games have gone to the Texans twice and lost twice.
Right.
And if they want to do better, they need to win the division. And Dalton has got to take a step as a passer, I think. You know, they've got most of the other things that they need. I mean, the weapons other than Green are still not great, but they did draft some people this year, like Eifert, the tight end from Notre Dame, Notre Dame that went to the national title game. So I'm going to back the Bengals to win this division.
Yeah, I am too. I think their defense is solid, and I think their offense is going to improve.
Much like the Saints-Falcons thing, I think it's a real coin flip type of deal. Could come down to tiebreakers, but I think Baltimore being a little bit off the pace is going to be what the Bengals need to take that opportunity. James?
I think in my mind, there's a never trust the Bengals. It's a glowing neon sign that I can't look away from.
This is the problem, you see. No, the Bengals went 15 years in a row out of the playoffs. And this is the problem. It's like with the Bills, it's been 30. I just feel even years from now, when they're good, when they make the playoffs back-to-back years, no one will ever take them seriously. It's just the brand has been irreparably tarnished.
That division was so bad last year. And I don't know how much of their their record was a result of the rest of that division.
I wouldn't say it was bad. I mean, I think it was highly competitive. I think that they, Baltimore...
The Steelers were worse than they've been in the recent years. The Browns were the Browns. And the Ravens actually, you know, they were 10-6.
Yeah, it's true. The Ravens probably weren't, as I said, as good as some other years. So it wasn't the division's best year.
I think the Bengals accumulated some extra wins because of the other team. So... I don't know. I could see this division going top to bottom 8-8. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here.
I think 10-6 certainly could win it again. I mean,
I think 10-6 definitively wins this division.
I don't think the winner of this division is going to get a bye. No.
No, I don't think so. The winner of this division's playing.
We all know who's getting the byes in the AFC. Manning and Brady. I mean, yep. Come on.
Manning and Brady.
But probably by multiple games.
With those divisions that they're playing in. Unless injuries intervene, it's...
I mean, I guess I'll give it to the Bengals to be contrarian to myself.
But not
no longer the Bungles.
But, so, I mean, what, is it just like you don't, in the end, you don't like any of them that
I don't know, because the Ravens are going to have that post-Super... I mean, they spent so many years trying to get to the Super Bowl, and they finally did it. And I think that there's that post-Super Bowl hump most teams go through.
Yeah.
I think they've lost the heart and soul of that team, and also the bloody shirt of Ray Lewis. I think...
Just like he lost his suit?
I don't know where it went.
I don't know where that white suit went. Who knows?
I think the Steelers are old, and I think Ben Roethlisberger, who takes hits, unbelievable numbers of hits, because A, he holds on to the ball too long, and B, his line play wasn't great.
It's true.
He's been injured a bunch of times. I think he's going to be prematurely aging. The Browns, I don't know what the hell to expect out of the Browns. At least with the Bengals, I kind of have an idea of what I'm getting.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm getting really is that whoever wins it, they're not a serious contender for you.
No.
I think maybe the Bengals are the one that, if the offense were to take a step, you know, they might have a chance to because again, the other teams in the AFC aren't that great. You know, they don't have to be that awesome. And then with the Steelers, just that defense, dominant defense. If you get in the playoffs, sometimes that's all you need to ride it out, you know, like the
but
Giants.
But they really are getting old.
It's a concern, but I'm not writing them off by any means. But we'll move on to the AFC South now. And this is, most people would say, a two-horse race. But we'll start with the other two.
The two mules.
So, the Jags.
The Jags.
They took the worst logo in the NFL and made it worse.
The Jaguars.
That's what we have to talk about.
Let's just look at the stats. Okay, passing yards. Last year, they were 21st overall.
21st? I can't believe it's that high.
I know. I'm shocked.
Rushing yards, they were 30th overall.
Oh, God.
Defensively, 22nd against the pass.
Perfect.
Rushing, 30th against
the pass. If you can be in the bottom half of every statistic, you've got to do it.
No, I mean, it was horrific for the Jags last year. But, I mean, it's a case of the GM was still in place and hired Mike Mularkey. But then it kind of dawned on their owner, Khan, that, yeah, actually the personnel's terrible. So
I should get rid of the
GM. We'll get rid of that GM. And, of course, then when you get a new one, then Mularkey, it's not really his fault. They went 2-14. It was a terrible team. But then, of course, the new GM comes in and Mularkey's out after 1 year. So now you've got a proper clean slate to be, well, in terms of the front office and the coach.
So not in terms of Blaine Gabbert.
But Blaine Gabbert's not
Blaine
the clean
Gabbert, slate. The statue.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, look, they have been so bad as a team. It's tempting to think that maybe Gabbert, you know, he
but
could.
But again, I watched Gabbert in college. I never saw Blaine Gabbert and said, this guy's got it.
I never thought that somebody would make me long for the days of Joey Harrington, but Blaine Gabbert is it.
Damn, eh? No, I mean, Gabbert has looked bad. There's just no getting around. I mean, he's been on bad teams. He's not exactly at every advantage, but he's looked really bad.
I mean, he just doesn't look like he gets it.
Yeah,
it's not
he looks. He looks scared.
Well, he should be. Have
he should
seen
be. But yeah,
play?
The Jags. Yeah. They've got Bradley as the head coach. He's a promising defensive mind, but the question's going to be, you know, how good.
Same Blaine Gabbert.
How good's the offense going to be? Who's going to play quarterback? And this year is going to be about probably letting Gabbert fizzle out and then getting ready to pick a quarterback high next year. Unfortunately, it looks like that kind of season to me.
Yeah.
You never know with the NFL, but.
Yeah, they could be 1-15.
So with that said, then move on.
With that said, Jags to win the division.
Tennessee have more about them, but you know, they weren't great last year at 6-10.
They've got Greg Williams' new goatee.
They do have Greg Williams, who appears to be in disguise. Actually,
a very bad disguise.
He's pulling the old Bobby Valentine bit.
Greg, if you've been suspended from the NFL for a year, you don't have to wear the disguise and come back as El Jefe El Williams. And if you're going to dye your mustache, dye your hair.
I heard he was going around as Carlos Danger's old younger brother for a while. I mean, Greg Williams, you know, he's been disgraced with the Bountygate thing. He wasn't a success as the head coach of the Bills, and he got passed over for head coach of the Redskins. But the guy knows defense. Like, Tennessee's defense was an embarrassment last year, and it might be about to get quite a bit better. I mean, there's personnel issues that he's not going to be able to just completely erase. Right. But the fact is, he is bringing a level of expertise to that coaching staff they didn't have before. That can only be good for them. Offensively, though,
they're still digging out from the Vince Young hole.
Well, there's that. But, I mean, you talk about copycat leagues, trends, fads. The Tennessee are just going completely in the opposite direction of what everyone else is doing. Because, they have Mike Munchak, it was an offensive lineman himself, a very good one, as the head coach of the team. And it seems like he is commanding all the personnel decisions, because they went out and signed one of the Bills' starting guards, Andy Levitre, who has been excellent for the Bills, one of the few bright spots. So he came in as a rookie, started every game for 4 years and was great. But they're paying him more than $8 million a year at the guard position, which is a lot of money. They go and spend their top pick on Chance Womack, another guard, from that Alabama crew.
Oh, that 300-pound average line?
Yeah, so, I mean, who victimized Notre Dame in the championship game? Impressive guys, but, I mean, a top pick on a guard, $8 million a year for a guard? This is kind of, to me, it seems like almost maybe throwing good money after bad, because they gave that big second contract to Chris Johnson, and he has not lived up to it. Most elusive of stats, yards after contract, has not quite been going.
I thought he misspoke, but then I thought about it.
But, you know, it's been a real minefield re-signing running backs, and it just seems like they're like, okay, look, if we have this offensive line, he has no excuses. He has to get 2,000 yards again.
And, you know, they played Washington in the preseason game, and he broke a nasty run that I hadn't seen him break since his record-setting year.
No, I mean, he's a home run hitter. I mean, this guy, you know, the 4.2 speed or in the 40-yard, I mean, but what he does that I think has annoyed Tennessee fans and presumably the coaching staff as well is those ones where he seems to get fixated on breaking the big one. So on a run-of-the-mill play, he starts dancing back there, you know, and he's trying to break a big play, and then he takes losses that kill drives when, you know, you probably could have got 3 or 4 yards on that play if you just get upfield. And maybe they think if you have a dominant offensive line, you get more of the good out of Chris Johnson and minimize the bad. But it's a lot to devote to the running game. And then they've still got Locker at quarterback, who I still don't feel like we've got a really good handle on what
he
can do.
This is another guy who in college never showed anybody anything. But he had all those measurements that scouts go nuts over.
I remember people getting excited about Locker, like, oh, you know, like next year he might be the best quarterback. But then he took a step back in the last year that he played.
Yeah, because he played at Washington those years, like right after those years where the Washington State games were just abysmal, like 1-9 and 1-8 matchups. Mm-hmm. Like, so they were better with him there, but they were never good.
It just seems like they've also been stuck in this nasty cycle where you don't know what you've got yet. And that's a bit, however good the running game is, they need to make a decision on whether he's worth keeping and leading the franchise, because they might be, you know, headed the right direction with the rest of the team. I don't think it's out of the question that they could be.
With all the money they're spending on protection, he's in the same position as Chris Johnson. he's got to succeed.
Yes, he's he's got. I mean, I think it's an emphasis on run blocking, but yeah, I mean, he should be able to protect Locker too. So yeah, there's nowhere to hide. I think it's going to be a kind of do or die season there. But obviously, the top two teams from last year, the Colts and the Texans, they both went to the playoffs. The Colts. Really interesting team last year. Obviously, Andrew Luck was coming in and everyone had really high expectations for him because he was supposed to be so polished. You know, for this guy coming out of college, played in that pro style Stanford system, incredibly intelligent and cool and all that stuff. And he certainly backed that up in the first year, even though his completion percentage was not great. But
no, and he had a really high attempts.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that has to do with the fact that they could not run the ball for beans. I mean, the offensive line was another one of those offensive lines that was kind of passable at pass blocking, absolutely awful at run blocking. So he was throwing the ball all over the place, and the defense was bad too. So you get behind, what are you going to do? And he did a really admirable job of pulling games out for them. They actually were 7-1 in games decided by just one score.
Yeah. And right. I mean, and that typically is the mark of a true franchise quarterback, right? Like he'll win you games by himself.
Yeah. But that high of there's a certain amount of luck involved.
A certain amount of luck, but
you know,
all right. No, we're not. No, that's not what I meant.
Veering into pun territory, but
yeah,
you would not expect that again. Now, maybe Luck this year, Andrew Luck is so good. They don't play in that many close games anymore. I mean, that on the one hand, you say, well, you don't win that many close games 2 years in a row. But first of all, maybe Luck is just clutch. The guy's got ice in his veins and he's just that good when the game's on the line. And B, they could actually get ahead in games and stay ahead this year if he... Because everyone says the biggest step that people take is from that first year starting to the second year starting, whenever that is in their career. There may be Luck's, you know, far ahead of the curve anyway, but certainly like Peyton Manning, he was amazing in his second year and he's been amazing ever since, obviously. And so if you're following that kind of progression,
right?
I'm still not thrilled about his supporting cast. I'm not seeing the running game getting a lot better. I'm not sure you're going to get another crazy Indian summer year out of Reggie Wayne. That was ridiculous. He had a monster year last year. And this is a guy that was drafted in 2000. I mean, he's ancient for a receiver. Like, that was amazing, but I don't know whether you could get that again.
I don't think this was an 11-win team last year. I think this was probably an 8-win team, which still would have been a tremendous improvement.
Yeah, I mean, they were the worst team in the league, obviously. But
they were superficially bad the year before. I mean, they lost Manning, obviously. But that team was so terrible, I think it's more a testament to how important Manning was to it.
Yeah, certainly.
They made improvements to that team besides getting Luck.
I tend to agree that you expect a bit of regression to the mean here. You know, right. That you don't win that many close games again. The thing is, this year, they're paired up with the NFC West on the one hand, which is quite difficult. All right, the Cards, you take that. But other than that, you know, even the Rams could be tough. On the other hand, the AFC West. So I still think that they could be in the 10-win territory.
Yeah. I'd say maybe 9-7.
No, 9-7, probably the most likely 10-6 on the upside. You know, it's still early for them. Obviously, you know, you want to win a Super Bowl whenever you can, but they're still building that team, especially
They've got a big window because he's still quite young.
And especially defensively, you know, Pagano coming over from the Ravens, you know, that defense, they've got a lot of work to do to get the parts for that defense. Yeah. But he's proven he can run it very well. So when they get the personnel, it could be a great compliment to Luck. But for me, I think they could still be good, but not good enough to unseat the Texans as division champions this year.
Yeah. I think the Texans will fall back, though. I don't see them being as good as they were last year.
See, I think the Texans are starting to leave their window.
Yeah, I think they are too.
I think this could be the last best chance for them. You know, they've been an excellent team the past couple of years, but it's just gone wrong for them. A bit about, obviously, the big one was when Shorb went down 2 years ago. And so then they had to play the playoffs with TJ Yates or whatever his name was. You know, that was, he wasn't going to win the Super Bowl with Yates, a quarterback. I mean, they did well to get as far as they did, frankly. It pushed Baltimore pretty damn hard, in fact. So, and then last year, they had some injuries on defense, and the defense started to, even though, I mean, JJ Watt, Scott had a season for the ages. I mean, just amazing production from him. But Brian Cushing going down, the defense lost a bit of its edge. The passing game's lost some of its edge because Andre Johnson, you know, he was drafted in 2003 or something. I mean, he's getting on. And then the running game, you know, Arian Foster's taken a vicious beating.
Oh, yeah. There's a risk when you have a feature back like that.
It's the closest thing I've seen to what the Cowboys used to do to Emmitt. I mean, they have run this guy into the ground, and I don't know whether he's losing his edge a bit, but I also think the offensive line is just not. Yeah, there was a time, yeah, particular when Houston didn't have a good defense before Wade Phillips got there, where that offense was amazingly productive because the offensive line was so good.
Right.
It's not as good anymore. It's not bad, I don't think, you know, especially compared to some of these teams you talk about that can't run block, but I kind of agree that they're not all that they were, but I still feel like, you know, if something doesn't go wrong for them the way it has in the other years, they're still a contender type team.
Right, I think it's the same thing we said about the Ravens, which that wasn't their best team that won Super Bowl.
Exactly, it can happen. Just, you know, keep plugging away, you put yourself in that playoff mix. I still think a somewhat diminished Texas team is good enough to win it.
Oh, yeah. I think they are. I think they're good enough to go far.
So we say Texans unanimous division winners there?
Yeah. I can't see the Colts being better than them, let me put it that way.
I wouldn't be surprised if every single team in this division has more losses this year, including the Jags.
That's what I'm saying. I can see the Jags going 1-15.
Oh, by the way, Jags and Cardinals is a thing that's going to happen this year. That is a game that will be on television.
Yeah, that's the thing. I look at that and I think that's going to be the Jags' one win.
You know what's scary is both those teams have circled that game. Because you know what the Cardinals fans say? We're going to win against the Jags at least.
Scalper's night off. That's what that is.
That says like a treat as rare as Johnny Manziel autograph memorabilia. But, you know, if we're going to talk about teams that might be in the running for the number one overall pick, I've got a doozy for you in the AFC West. So let's just get Oakland out of the way. And it's quite remarkable that they are a team in the same division as the team that had the number one overall pick last year, the Kansas City Chiefs. And yet, for me, the Raiders are runaway favorites to finish bottom.
To be honest, in this division, you could have pick 1, 2, and 3.
I'd kind of like the Chiefs to bounce back this year. I think they will be competitive.
Yeah, they at least have the pieces in place to be competitive.
I know the Pro Bowl is not worth a lot in terms of the game is worth nothing, but in terms of the voting, you know, the who goes is not worth it. It's kind of fan stuffed and all right. There's a lot of reputation that goes into it. You know, people just kind of get in and they just keep going because of inertia. But I mean, the Chiefs had 6 Pro Bowlers last year. Like they have playmakers.
They won 2 games.
Yeah, but, I mean, they have players that I think a new coaching staff and a better quarterback, which Alex Smith...
And some Adderall?
Alex Smith, you know, is... People tend to vary on how good they think he is. I mean, you know, I think San Francisco is very flattering on him. Personally, I definitely rate him higher than Castle. And I definitely like the marriage of him and Andy Reid, that West Coast system I think he can play well in. You know, they've got Dwayne Bowe. They've got a good offensive line that they've added to with the first overall pick. They've got Jamaal Charles, who's just like, I mean, he is really, really dynamic and figures to be even better this year if he's healthy, I think. So, I mean, they've got a lot of pieces in place on offense. They've got some talented players on defense. You've got Oakland there, San Diego, not any great shakes. They can contend to be 500 or 9-7. I think that's well within range.
I don't think they're 500. I think with the having to play the AFC South and the NFC East, that knocks them out of contention for 500 right away.
Yeah, I could see them being maybe 7-9, maybe.
They won't win any game against an AFC East team. They won't win against the Broncos any of the times. That's 6 losses.
I just think that coaching situation has been really bad.
And, oh, yeah, it's been terrible.
And Andy Reid, there's split opinions on, you know, what he did or did not bring to the Philadelphia Eagles, especially... I mean,
hopefully he left his challenge flag at home.
Yeah, I mean, his game management stuff, I think everyone can agree, was bad. You know, like,
it was the worst in the league.
But as a, you know, as a guy that runs an offense, a play caller... he has his merits, and I think he's a
Absolutely,
he has a big upgrade over what they had. For me, they're finishing second in this division. Now, how good that is...
I don't know.
How good that is, I don't know, but they're finishing second. So the Raiders quickly...
No, because we have 6 years of collective jokes about the Raiders.
We don't want to dwell on the Raiders, but just I do want to say I feel sorry for Matt Flynn because he missed out last year... because of, you know, Russell Wilson. Yeah, first of all, I mean, the Seahawks weren't necessarily going to end up with Russell Wilson. So he could have been quarterback in that team. He wouldn't have been as good as Russell Wilson. That's unlikely. But it's a very good team. And he could have been a playoff quarterback. And now this right. year, he gets to preside over a toxic waste dump. I mean, he's finally going to... He was behind Rodgers in Green Bay, and he had a couple of decent, meaningless games, or garbage time. But you know, I feel like this is really tough because this is his shot, and it's going to toxify him. I think it's going to...
Honestly, I would never sign a deal with the Raiders. I'd be a backup before I'd be their starter.
We got traded.
That's true. Oh, yeah. You're right. Oh, my God.
You think he went there willingly? That's why I feel so...
Yeah. That's right. I would have a no-trade clause that says no trade to the Raiders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would take $1 million less to have that in my contract.
Yeah.
Because you'll just kill yourself. I mean, you may literally kill yourself, but emotionally, you'll kill yourself. Because...
I mean, it's nothing against Dennis Allen and the new people I have at Oakland. This is all the toxic legacy of what went on at the end of that.
Yeah, I mean, when you've been burying nuclear waste in the ground for 30 years, it's going to be problematic.
But they were, I mean, at the point where Al Davis, immediately before his death and then after it, they did crazy things. They were pushing the salary cap, traded draft picks all over the place for Carson Palmer, all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and they were doing it like they were loading up for the Super Bowl, and they couldn't even get past the Tebow Broncos. I mean, and now they've got, you know, the few draft picks, still dealing with dead money on the salary cap for players that were never worth it. It's going to take years to recover from that, I do feel sorry for those Oakland fans, but that's where they are. And I think, you know, like I said, I do not envy Matt Flynn one bit.
I mean, there's an Oakland. You do realize the Jags will play both the Cardinals and the Raiders this year.
There you go. You're number one overall pick sweeps, I think, probably. Those teams.
The loser of that trio gets the number one pick. I mean...
Could be it.
They're abysmal. I mean, they're going to be awful.
No, it's a really tough rebuilding process for them. I mean, now, the next team in the division that we haven't talked about is the Chargers, which have got a somewhat less imposing... Ooh. Rebuilding job on their hands, but
they've got to fix the psychological mess that North Turner left in his wake.
I do feel like, though, you know, people want to bag on North, and there's some warranted criticism.
I'm a Redskins fan. I will never stop bagging on North.
You never forget. I know, and he was there a mysteriously long time considering how little he did. But
I know.
But the thing is with San Diego, that I think the North stuff kind of papers over the fact that personnel has been declining for a while.
Yeah,
I mean, right. When you think of the year that Philip Rivers first played, 2006, they were 14-2. Most people thought they had the best roster in the league. It's been a long way down from there.
Yeah, I think when Schottenheimer went, he was calling the personnel decisions, wasn't he?
No. That was AJ Smith, and they hated each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. It was the most dysfunctional relationship in the league.
Schottenheimer was originally hired by John Butler, who was once the GM of the Bills, and he passed away. And so when AJ Smith took his place, I guess that relationship didn't get any better, and it got worse, actually. And so, yeah, I mean, they kind of went from having this sterling roster to all under AJ Smith's watch, it just got worse and worse. And I think the issue really is with the offensive line, principally for me. I mean, you've seen Rivers the past couple of years look really poor for someone who performed at the level that he did early in his career. And I guess the real question for Chargers fans, I think, is is that because the protection was really bad and the defense and special teams might have been struggling, and so he was trying to force stuff, or you know, this, that, and the other, and you know, he's just been in a bad situation? Or is it that, you know, his skills of...
He just looks confused when you watch him play. Like, he just doesn't look like he understands what's going on around him. I mean, the look on his face tells everything. And part of it is probably because his line is collapsing around him so fast, he doesn't have a chance to read the defense.
Well, it's a different kind of decision-making than he was doing, you know, earlier in his career with the Chargers. I mean, it's...
But part of it just looks like he's not there. Like, he's completely checked out.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's tough when you've been contending and now you're not contending. You know, a lot of these really good quarterbacks... Yeah, once they start winning, they don't stop winning, so they don't go through like lost seasons. Right. But Rivers has experienced that. The new coach is Mike McCoy, who comes over from Denver, and this is one of those hires that I feel is too topical driven. I mean, look, the guy might be great; he might be the next Bill Walsh for all I know, obviously. But it's one of these things where it's like, okay, so he was there when Peyton Manning played last year and was Peyton Manning.
Right.
So that means what about his coaching ability?
Exactly. Not hard to win with Peyton Manning, really.
Was he involved in the personnel of building that team? Like before?
No, he's much too young for that. I mean, the personnel, you know, obviously John Fox is the head coach at Denver. Right. He's a defensive guy. So that's some of the reason why McCoy gets credit, because he was the chief offensive coach on the staff. But like I said, I mean, you've got Peyton Manning on the one hand, then he also gets credit for Tebow's season on the other hand. And while... Yes, it's amazing that they went to the playoffs with Tebow and actually won a playoff game. And I'm sure he made some adroit decisions to contribute to that. That is not the basis to hire a head coach. I mean, first of all, you never want to have a Tebow situation on your hands as a franchise, so you don't want someone that knows how to handle that.
Yeah, it's fluky as you can get. That whole season was just really fluky.
Well, no, it wasn't fluky, though, because that team is really good except for Tim Tebow.
Well... The defense was really good, yeah.
The defense was fantastic. They had some good pieces at the running game. I mean, they just needed a quarterback. You saw why they went from...
They had two or three really solid wide receivers.
No, they went from 8-8 to 13-3, you know, so when they put a real quarterback in there. And don't forget, that 8-8 is vastly inflated by the fact the division sucks balls. So, I mean...
Exactly.
For me, the point I'm making is... That's not much of a resume to hire a head coach. Like, no. Maybe the guy blows you away in interviews and he's young and he's got the incredible football brain, all that kind of stuff. But for me, big kind of rebuilding job that they've got, trying to salvage what's left of Rivers' career, he's a bit callow for my liking. I'm not sure whether I'd be that happy with that as a San Diego fan. But we'll see how it turns out. I think it's probably going to be a bit much for them to push Denver this year because Denver is so set up to win.
I think the hire was ultimately motivated by wanting to get the anti-Norv.
Yeah, young, yeah. You know, like not someone that has any baggage that Norv has from other jobs.
Alive.
Yeah, also, you know, pull somebody away from the Broncos too. I mean, it never hurts raiding your nemesis coaching staff.
Yeah, Al Davis used to love doing that, and it didn't work out that well for him most of the time.
What things did work out well for Al Davis?
John Gruden.
Yeah.
Sean Madden.
Well, they used to be really good. I mean, don't forget, Al Davis, they won 3 Super Bowls. Like, he used to be on the cutting edge. But
Tom Cable worked out great for him.
Art Shell. Awesome.
Well, Archer was all right the first time. The problem is, like, like 15 years elapsed. I don't know, you know. I mean, Denver's going to win this division, I think, pretty...
Oh, yeah, by a dozen games.
I think pretty comfortably. For me, over the Chiefs in the second spot. But Denver not only win the division, but get a bye.
I think they're going to have this division locked up by week 10.
No, I mean, they may well do. I mean, last year they got off to a bit of a slow start. You know, maybe Peyton hadn't...
Well, he hadn't played in a year. And he had had like 18 neck surgeries. I mean...
He's a year older, but at the same time, you know, now that he's that neck stuff's behind him and all that, he could be better this year. I mean, I know...
Yeah, well, they're saying his arm strength is back 100%.
Yeah, I mean, his game's not predicated on athleticism.
No, he's always been a statue, so that's not the issue. And they re-signed Clady, so they've got that rock solid pass protection still in place. There's been a few chinks in the inevitability armor, with the Von Miller suspension possibly coming up.
Lost Doomerville.
Yeah, Doomerville because of the facts there.
That was ridiculous. That was just embarrassing.
In the year 2013, you failed to re-sign a player because of a facts-related snafu. That's amazing. And then a couple of the front office guys got busted on like DUIs and stuff. So,
I mean, yeah,
yes, they did.
Some strange stuff going on there, but nothing to change my mind that they're going to win that division and be major contenders. But the question is, and this has happened a lot to Peyton Manning, to be fair. And I mean, you've got to get there for this to happen to you, but, you know, big seedings and then in the play, that, you know, is it Peyton Manning's fault? I would argue it was the defense's fault last year. I mean, it played great, or it was like the opposite of some of these teams we talked about that get hot. You know, they played great defense all year and then laid an egg in the playoffs. Just, I mean, I know Joe Flacco's got a big arm and the air's thin up there.
But come on. That's one play.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, to me, this is a team that they will miss the first week of the playoffs, obviously.
Yeah.
They will get somebody at home and they should win because they should win pretty much any game that's played in Denver.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great home field advantage. The crowd, the altitude, you know, I mean, that's how they beat the Steelers. With Tebow, you know, I mean, like, it was home field advantage. It was much like when Seattle beat the Saints, when the Saints were four games better than them, and Seattle was 7-9, is because, you know, home field advantage can do that. That's the NFL. It can mean a lot. And it's so unimaginative. It's terrible to do this sort of thing and then come up with, like, Manning and Brady in the championship game, but it's just so fucking hard not to
It just seems inevitable.
I mean, really, to me, Brady has to choke for it to not happen. Because I think it's a lot easier to win in New England than it is to win in Denver.
I agree.
All right, let's recap then. So we've got our division winners, but also now let's pick the wild card team. So for me, I had obviously the Patriots, the Bengals, the Texans, and the Broncos. And then for the wild cards coming out of it, I've got the Steelers, and then the non-boring choice, I'm going with the Chiefs. And they're my worst to first, not actually first, it's second, but I think they're going to make the playoffs off the back of, you know, a bit of a weak schedule and just the relative indifference of, you know, kind of all the other teams in the AFC. James, who are your wildcard teams?
So I had the Broncos, the Texans, the Bengals, and the Patriots. So I think for me, if I didn't pick the team, I feel bad about them. I mean, you could see a three-team AFC North representation here with the Ravens and the Steelers.
John, where you go?
Okay, well, my winners are, of course, the Patriots. Patriots, Bengals, Texans, and the Broncos. And for the wild card, I got the Colts and I got the Ravens. But I think it's going to be a dogfight, though. I think basically the Colts and the Steelers are going to be duking it out for one of the wild card spots.
Well, I felt a bit bad about not picking them because it's like, you know, quarterback driven league luck. I mean, you might look very, very silly for not
them. No, I mean, I could look super dumb. I picked three teams out of one division.
It's just that the rest of the team is so soft, you know, like it's just on the one hand, I hate picking against luck, but on the other hand, I hate picking the rest of the team, you know, like,
Here's how I look at it though. Of the three big quarterbacks that were rookies last year, Luck statistically was the worst of the three.
But he also had the worst team around him, so he was in less favorable situations.
He did. Now, you could say he had, like, the argument for him was that he had the most yards, but he had way more attempts than the others.
Yeah, because they couldn't run. I mean, as I said, couldn't run the ball. Defense were very good. So, I mean, he was forced into those situations. But, I mean, we haven't seen him play, like, ultra-efficient.
And here's the thing. He's still going to have the worst team of those three.
That is true. That is true, yeah. And, I mean, yeah, maybe they don't win those close games this year. That's why I didn't pick them. But it's, you know, with the kind of reverence that people hold Luck in already, it's, and the kind of jump that quarterbacks can make from the first circuit, I just put it on record, you know.
Brandon Whedon this year, it's his year.
I'm not that comfortable about picking against him, but I've done it. All right, well, so we've got our fields of playoff teams across the two segments, so it's time for the big game, the big dance.
Yes.
in February, who have we got making the Super Bowl from the respective conferences? So I'm going to ask for your NFC representatives, James.
Oh, God, the NFC's a mess.
The NFC's so hard. It's so fucking hard to
pick. Once the playoffs gets going, basically any division winner could win that. And, I mean, the wild cards I don't feel as solid about, but, like, let's say for example, Football Messiah is healthy. The Redskins could totally just whack three teams on the way to the playoffs.
No, I mean, like I said, I think what I like about the Redskins is if that defense gets really good, which is not out of the question, that's a hell of a combination. You know,
because they were really good at the end of the year.
Yeah, they played a lot better at the end of the year, and they still didn't have Arakpo and Carricker. They'd adjusted to them not being there, but they still weren't there. You know, this year, those are really good players that are coming back. Haslett seems to be doing a pretty good job. I wasn't sure about Haslett when they hired him, but he seems to be doing a good job.
Why would you not be sure of UFL Head Coach of the Year? From the Las Vegas Night Trains.
But, you know, this is the thing for me, right? And this is how it's totally difficult to make a decision on an NFC winner, I agree. But I tried to sort of make it simple for myself in this one way. There's one team that, for me, if they get the number one seed, it is over. And that is Seattle.
Yes, because nobody goes to Seattle and wins.
No, even when they're not very good and they're in the playoffs, like that game with the earthquake when Lynch went on that run, there was a bad team. There was a losing team in a shitty division. Playing.
Yeah, I mean, they had no business hosting a playoff game.
And yet you put them as the host of that game against a very credible opponent in the Saints, they win the game. And that's the thing. They're good now. I mean, they're really good. Definite contender for one of the best rosters in the league. If they can win that division, and like I said, I think the thing that goes in their favor, normally you'd say, well, if you're in a division with San Francisco, if that's going to be a real battle, that lessens your chance to get the number one seed. But the problem is you could kind of say that about all the divisions in the NFC. No one's got it all to themselves. You know, Atlanta's got New Orleans. Your Green Bay have got Minnesota and Chicago. The NFC East has got itself. I mean, it's just...
it's got everyone but the Eagles.
Well, so for me, if Seattle can get to like 12-4 and then, you know, get that number one seed, no one's going to beat them in Seattle. So I'm picking Seattle to represent the NFC.
You're just playing the odds at that point.
Yeah, it's like I said, I mean, if you're taking Seattle or the field, I'm taking the field. But if you're picking a single team, it's Seattle for me in the NFC.
Oh, God, how exciting would an NFC championship game with Washington and Seattle be?
Yeah, Washington, Seattle, San Francisco, Seattle, either of those, I think
it would be just nuts. I mean, it would be a TV bonanza.
Yeah, Fox would be doing cartwheels. But Joe Buck still wouldn't sound excited.
He'd still sound dead inside.
So John, have you got an NFC representative?
Yeah, my NFC pick is San Francisco. You would think that I would pick the Falcons, but the thing is, the Falcons, I don't believe in their defense, and that may change over the year. Mm. But at this point, I don't really see enough significant changes to that defense to merit really necessarily believing in them in terms of having that championship-style defense, whereas I think the 49ers have that.
Yeah.
And also the fact that San Fran is very battle-tested.
It's true. They're so close the past 2 years. I think Harbaugh is just going to keep them right where they need to be mentally. And yeah, I think it's a very persuasive argument. I mean, certainly if Seattle don't win the division and San Francisco do, and they get the home games, mm-hmm. yeah, then San Francisco next in line. But James?
I have this really nauseous feeling that just makes me feel really upset that tells me that I'm almost terrified of the Giants.
Oh, he's got the return of the Giants.
It's been a few years now, and
every so often they just...
Like, there's nothing about that team I look at and go, yeah, they're done.
The thing about the Giants, any given year, there's always a few games that they play with. They look so good. Like, they just dismantled Green Bay last year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that looks... They made that Green Bay team look amateur.
And considering the defense ended up finishing nearly bottom of the league, it's how the hell did they do that to Aaron Rodgers?
And that's the problem. It's this. There are these teams that in the NFC East that or the NFC period that I don't think can get to the Super Bowl. But I look at every team I put them against, and I'm like,
The Giants are just one of those teams for me. If they get in, they're dangerous.
Right. I think I just need to set them aside and say, assume they're not going to be a problem. And I think you're right to play the odds and go with Seattle.
All right, so we've got San Francisco and two for Seattle. Now, the AFC choices. For me, thoroughly boring choice, but I'm going to go... I just cannot. I can't do it. I cannot pick Brady to make the Super Bowl. even though based on RFN's prescience rating, I probably should pick Brady right. In an effort to...
Because he'll be injured in the first game of the season.
Yeah, in an effort to jinx him. But I'm going to go with Peyton Manning and I'm going to go with Denver, which would set up a Seattle-Denver old-school AFC West division rivalry game. Mm-hmm. I think it would be... You know, you remember the days of Boz talking shit about John Elway.
Boz. Oh, Stone Cold, buddy. Stone Cold.
It'd make for some fun build-up to that game, but also I think be great. A great Super Bowl. Two good defenses. Total contrast of styles at quarterback. But it would be absolutely fascinating. So that's my Super Bowl matchup.
I'm going Broncos.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, I have not believed in New England for a long time. They've just always seemed to find ways to lose instead of finding ways to win, no matter how well they do in the regular season.
I mean, they just seem like they're a representative version, a pantomime version of what they were a few years ago.
I think also, I mean, there's something to be said, you know, in the dark days where the AFC lost 13 Super Bowls in a row or whatever it was, the AFC would have some good teams, but just not as many as the NFC, and those teams were never as battle-tested. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole toughest neighborhood thing. You know, like the Giants, when they won the Super Bowl, well, they were in a tough division with the Cowboys and the Eagles, and you know, so they were ready for the big time. Whereas, you know, when the Bills would go to the Super Bowl 4 years in a row, the other teams weren't pushing them as much. Yeah. And I think New England... they've done such a good job of crushing the other teams in the AFC East.
They have salted the earth.
It is actually too easy that they just float into the playoffs, and I don't think they're quite as...
See, I think there's a pretty good argument to make for that, because that Baltimore team played with an edge against everybody.
Yeah.
No, and it's easier to do that when you're fighting for your lives.
That's exactly it. The Patriots, they never have to fight for their life. They just roll over teams, and then they get into the playoffs.
And I mean, obviously, you know, that's why I'm a little bit like, that's just what happened to Denver last year. You know what I mean? They walked right into that too. And that might well be the problem this year. That is kind of a reservation that I have. Like maybe that's where a team like the Texans that are in that kind of next tier could upset the odds, but I still feel...
But the Texans have just crumbled in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've beaten the Bengals, so they've done something.
No, they beat the Bengals!
But, to be fair, like I said, they pushed Baltimore in 2011 with TJ Yates at quarter. I mean, what do you want them to do? I mean,
they were
bad against the Pats last year. I'll accept that.
They were terrible.
That was poor. But if a team's going to profit from New England or Denver being too soft, I think the Texans might be that team.
I think if it's going to be a team that's going to profit from them, I think it's got to be the team that exposes them for being too soft. I don't think the Texans are that team because they are pillowy soft.
Well, you say that, but that defense at full strength, you know, Cushing, JJ Watt.
I'm talking about the offense.
Yeah, the kind of defense though that can upset Brady and Manning, you know, the pressure up the middle.
Well,
you know,
I mean, the Pats have never responded well, or at least in the past several years, they have not responded well to a defense that just comes up and punches them in the face.
Right.
They haven't. They get intimidated by that. And, you know, anything that gets Brady off of his game, you know, if he starts getting hit a lot, they just kind of fall apart.
Well, that's the dark side of doing this quick snap offense. Mm-hmm. Is that if you're getting mentally rattled by it, you need to slow down.
Well, it's difficult to get in rhythm, isn't it? I mean, that's
exactly
what it's all about, is getting them out of rhythm. And you have Baltimore and the Jets, who kind of share a common defensive heritage because of Rex Ryan and Mike Nolan that was there before that. And all, like, they've had some success, but then there's still those games where Brady torches those teams. Like, he's still done. Like, the Jets had that one year where they got absolutely embarrassed in prime time. They murdered by the Patriots. And then in the playoffs, they went into Foxborough and won. So, I mean, it's even if you have a style of defense that can beat the Pats, it's not going to do it every time.
Yeah.
That's why they're always dangerous. But for me, again, playing the odds, I feel like Denver's the most likely. And
almost the exact same reason. If that game's played in Denver, I don't want to be the other team.
Yeah, which again, I mean, another thing we have to say is like 1v1 matchups, you know, number one seed, hardly ever happens. The Saints right. and the Colts did it the year the Saints won the Super Bowl, and that was the first time that it happened since Bills-Dallas. Yeah, you know, so, I mean, that was a long gap. So maybe it's foolish to think that, oh, well, you know, like these teams are great. Cause it doesn't happen. Like at least not both, you know? So it feels like the thing with the NFL is you should always predict the unpredictable. But the problem with that is that there's loads of stuff that's unpredictable.
Oakland Cardinals done. In the worst Super Bowl ever.
Yep. So, right, who we got as Super Bowl winners then? Who's going to triumph?
Oh, where's it being played this year? It's being played in New York this year.
Yeah, it could be a snowstorm. Could be.
Oh, what a terrible idea.
It's about getting the stadium built. It's a carrot, and now we've got to live with it.
I know. But so for me, being Denver, Seattle, even though Denver's further south than Seattle, Seattle's a warm place.
It's temperate.
Yeah, warmer. But the problem is, in New York, the wind is a nightmare. And
yeah, that's the issue, isn't it? I mean, for me,
that's not Manning's greatest.
You start to think about maybe who's got the superior running game in that. You know, maybe Lynch rumbling over people again. People of Western New York know very well how good Lynch is at running over people. And, you know, I think that Seattle could be tough to beat in those kinds of conditions.
I think you're right at that point. I mean, if we have a Super Bowl and a blizzard, Roger Goodell should be fired. Like,
it's crazy. I know, but it's like, just think
about
it.
No way, it's going to be the Ice Bowl too, man. Come on.
But people can't even get to the game. That's the problem. Imagine if it's that bad that you can't even get there. And you let them have your stupid showbiz parties or whatever silliness they have around Super Bowl. It is crazy, but...
Like, the whole you build a stadium, you get a game, should have died after the Jacksonville game.
Yeah, maybe. But, John, who do you like in your Super Bowl matchup?
Well, that's the thing. You know, given that the Super Bowl's in New York, maybe it could be the Ice Bowl. I would have to give the advantage to San Francisco. So I'm picking San Francisco to go all the way.
Yeah, San Francisco would, despite being from one of the warmer cities in the league, would actually be relatively well put together to handle it. A lot of ground stuff.
No, I mean, and Kaepernick, that arm strength can be valuable, ripping it through the wind, that kind of thing.
And rushing the ball as well.
The one thing I will say is that if you get really bad snow, what it tends to do is it makes it very difficult to rush the passer because the field's so kind of soft, you can't get that release off the line where you just explode out of your stance and beat the tackle and then gets to the quarterback. You can't do it. You know, I mean, it's just sludge. So... it basically makes it actually, in some ways you think, oh, bad conditions, you know, favors running the ball, or it can actually make it easier to throw. It just from the point of view that the pass rush is nullified.
It's just the wind is the nightmare.
Yeah, that's the thing about New York is the swirling winds and all that. You know, it's something that happens in Buffalo as well that can make it tough. But, you know, leaving weather concerns out of it, I've got Seattle over Denver.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same place.
And so we've got a sweep for the NFC West, Seattle, San Francisco.
You got it.
Yes.
That is incredible. You think about when we started doing our event together, that was unthinkable.
I mean, so all
those were the teams who were bitching because they were going to get a playoff berth with a losing record.
Unjustifiably, but that's the great thing about the NFL. I mean, it's not some oligarchy that changes at a glacial pace or when some oil magnate decides to dump his petrodollars into something. I mean, it's if you get the right people making the right decisions, you can win, whoever you are. Even despite the Bills' attempts to disprove that, it can be done. And, you know, Seattle and San Francisco are both, to me, it's optimistic, like, for everyone. They look at how rapidly and dramatically they've turned those teams around. But that's the thing, you never know who's going to be the next team to do that. And that's what always makes every NFL season really exciting. All right, let's wrap it up. This fun little excursion into non-video game things. But, you know, to be fair, Retronauts recently did a sub-episode on prog rock. So,
oh, God.
It's been way more video games made about the NFL than prog rock. So I feel like we're
way
safe.
More topical.
We're on safe ground there. But yeah, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of people that skip this, and that's fine. It's a
fuck you guys. You'll never hear this.
It's a really bizarre niche thing that we've done that's self-indulgent just because nothing else was going to happen on the feed this week. But, you know, we hope that for those of you that did take the time to listen, that you enjoyed it, and we thank you for doing so. Normal service will resume with RFN next week. We'll be talking about Nintendo, I guess. And
No, I'll be talking about Saints Row, so not really.
Oh, yeah, of course. How silly of me.
I'll be talking about Zork 2.
Perfect.
So there it is. That's what you got to look forward to next week with the return of Johnny and Guillaume. But keep those emails coming into RFN at nintendoworldreport.com, as they are the lifeblood of the show when it's operating within normal parameters. Thanks to James and John for embarking on this weird little endeavor with me.
This has been awesome.
Thank you, Greg, for coming back and joining us.
Seriously.
On this endeavor.
Yeah, and now I will get to talk to pretty much no one for the rest of the NFL season. So I got it all out of the way at once. But that is it from me. So thanks very much for listening, and hope to catch you next time on RFN. Bye-bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.